ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So this 25th chapter, Modes and Beyond Modes, is also a kind of summary which we have studied earlier in Bhagavad Gita and other places. So in the 24th chapter, we have seen this Sankhya, the creation of the universe, the destruction of the universe, right, the winding up part. And Krishna, in the end of the chapter, he said, the Sankhya removes the duality, like the sun removes darkness. And I spoke to you, Sankhya, so that your illusion and doubt and other things could be destroyed. Right. However, as long as one does not conquer these modes, the actions which are orchestrated by the three modes, goodness, passion and ignorance, one continues to identify himself with his body. So Sankhya is giving us an explanation of matter and spirit, body and the soul, right? One may have the theoretical understanding of what is body and what is the soul, and one may know that these two are different. Still, unless one does not lift himself above the functionings of those modes, he cannot sustain the knowledge of Sankhya. Right? Sankhya explains body is different from soul, spirit is different from matter. But modes are there, one has to understand how modes are influencing a living entity. Right? That is inducing him to think that one is equal to the body. Right? So that's why Krishna, immediately after Sankhya, he wants to explain about the three modes and how to transcend the modes also. Right? So now, first Krishna says, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Gunanam Asam Mishranam Pumanye Nayatha Bhavet Tanme Purusha Varyetam Upadharaya Samsataham.
Nature by association with individual material modes.
Okay. First, Krishna, he has very nice style. There are three modes. First, he describes the qualities of these three modes when they are not mixed. Unmixed modes. Pure unalloyed goodness, pure passion, pure ignorance. Right? When they are not mixed with each other, what kind of qualities they exhibit? Right? He asam mishranam, gunanam asam mishranam. Unmixed state, modes in unmixed state cause these kind of qualities, right? Material modes. So unmixed goodness is here not completely equivalent to Shuddha Sattva. So it's also a material mode which is not tinged with passion and ignorance. So when they are acting separately, it causes a conditioned soul to manifest a particular type of existence. So what are those qualities? In the second to fifth verses, he explains. Second verse. Shamodamasti tikshekshaam tapasatyam dayasmritihi tushtistyagosprahashraddhaam harirdayadi svanirvrutah కామఈహామదస్తృష్ణ స్తంభ ఆశీర్భిదా సుఖం మదోత్సాహో యశః ప్రీతిర్ హాస్యం వీర్యం బలోద్యమ క్రోధో లోభోనృతం హింసా యాజ్నా దంభ క్లమ కలైః శోకమోహో విషాదార్తి నిద్రాశాభీర్ అనుద్యమః సత్వస్య రజసశ్చిత్తైః సత్వస్య రజసశ్చైతాః తమశశ్చానుపూర్వశః వృత్తయో వర్ణిత ప్రాయాః సన్నిపాతం అథోశృణు. సెకండ్, థర్డ్ అండ్ ఫోర్త్ వర్సెస్, దీస్ త్రీ వర్సెస్ ఆర్ డిస్క్రైబింగ్ ది క్వాలిటీస్ ఆఫ్ అన్మిక్స్డ్ గుడ్నెస్, ప్యాషన్ అండ్ ఇగ్నరెన్స్ రెస్పెక్టివ్లీ. ఓకే, యా, రీడ్ ది ట్రాన్స్లేషన్.
మైండ్ అండ్ సెన్స్ కంట్రోల్, టాలరెన్స్, డిస్క్రిమినేషన్, స్టిక్కింగ్ టు వన్స్ ప్రిస్క్రైబ్డ్ డ్యూటీ, ట్రూత్ఫుల్నెస్, మర్సీ, కేర్ఫుల్ స్టడీ ఆఫ్ ద పాస్ట్ అండ్ ఫ్యూచర్, satisfaction in any condition, generosity, renunciation of sense gratification, faith in the spiritual master, being embarrassed at improper action, charity, so simplicity.
Improper action is there in mode of goodness also, but when there is an improper action, there is a regret, there is not relish. So passionate person or ignorant person, even if they do ignorant, even if they do some mistake, they don't repent. Right? They don't regret for it. They relish it. But a person who is in mode of goodness, he is embarrassed. Yeah.
Charity, simplicity, humbleness and satisfaction within oneself are qualities of the mode of goodness.
Hmm.
Material desire, great endeavor, audacity, dissatisfaction even in gain, false pride, praying for material advancement, considering oneself different and better than others, sense gratification, rash eagerness to fight, a fondness for hearing oneself praised, the tendency to ridicule others, advertising one's own prowess and justifying one's action by one's strength are qualities of the mode of passion.
See, we can relate to some of these qualities, right?
Intolerant anger, stinginess, speaking without spiritual authority, violent hatred, living as a parasite, hypocrisy, chronic fatigue, quarrel, lamentation, delusion, unhappiness, depression, sleeping too much, false expectations, fear and laziness constitute the major qualities of the modes of ignorance. Now please hear about the combination of these three modes.
Okay, so these are the qualities of unmixed modes. Now if we have to relate to some of them, relate to these qualities, all of you must be having certain experience that sometimes, oh, I have some goodness qualities, I have some passion also, I have some ignorance also, I sleep too much, I have false expectations, today only I slept somewhere around 10 hours, still I am not recovering. So the tendency to sleep too much, that fondness of hearing oneself praised as a quality of passion, then dissatisfaction even in gain, right? We achieve certain success, still there is still hankering for more, right? Justifying one's actions, then having faith, some detachment, right? Embarrassed at proper action. So all these are there, right? In many of us, right? Some may be beyond modes also, I don't know, but but after reading all this, nobody finds himself completely belonging to one category, is it not? Anyone who is who can claim that I am completely belong to one category only, I am purely in goodness, purely in ignorance, purely in passion, purely ignorance, justify. You don't have advertising tendency, you don't have false pride, or you don't have mercy at all, you don't have detachment at all, humbleness, thoda to hai na. Yeah, that is humbleness. See, he proved that you have some quality of goodness also. So point is, everyone has a mixture of this. Right? One may be predominantly in one mode, but one cannot be completely in that mode. Predominantly, especially human beings, I am saying, at least human beings are a mixture of these three modes. If you see the popular picture yesterday, this picture only. This fellow is being operated by all three. There are three ladies there, goodness, passion and ignorance. So this, his ropes are connected to all three, not just one. Right? So human being operates himself under the influence of all three modes, not just one mode. It may be predominantly one mode, but there are always tinges of other modes also. Right? That's why in the material world, mode of goodness doesn't exist in its pure state. It is always tinged with passion and ignorance. So it is a mixture. That's why immediately Krishna says, now please hear about the combination of these three modes. I spoke about qualities. Now, what we need to understand is, when there is, say, renunciation, detachment, faith, right, charity, simplicity, when there is a prominence of those modes, we can understand that mode of goodness is prominent. It is prominent in that person at that time. Sometimes, in that same person, at some other time, other mode will become more prominent. Right? So, no one can be predominantly in one mode only all the time. Okay, a combination of modes is influencing me. Sixth verse. Yes, bro, English. Where? Where is it? singing is his lack of generosity. Lobha. Lobha. He says lack of generosity. Okay, sixth verse. Sannipatastaham iti mametyodhavaya mati vyavahara sannipato Manomatrendriyashubhai.
My dear Uddhav, the combination of all three modes is present in the mentality of I and mine. The ordinary transactions of this world, which are carried out through the agency of the mind, the object of perception, the senses and the vital air of the physical body, are also based on the combination of the modes.
Okay. So a human being, a conditioned soul in this material world, has these conceptions of I and mine, aham mameti, right? So many transactions are happening through his mind. Okay, there are sense objects, senses, etc. All these are influenced by a combination of modes, right? Maybe say 60-20-20 or 80-10-10, right? 33-33-33. It could be whatever may be the proportion, but it's a combination, right? So, somebody may say, say for somebody who is in mode of ignorance, anger is a quality of mode of ignorance. Can somebody be continuously, perpetually be angry all the while? Right? 24/7, he is angry only. Will that happen? You know, means he cannot be predominantly one mode. Right? Charity is the quality of goodness. Can he continuously 24/7 keep giving things? Right? Charity only. Simplicity. He cannot be continuously be simple. Sometimes he has to be complicated. Right? But he cannot exhibit that thing. If only one mode is influencing a person, this whole cosmic manifestation becomes chaos, chaotic. Right? People are operating only based on one mode without the tinges of other two modes. It becomes a lot of confusion. So we find that a material mode does not occur in a pure isolated form, but rather is mixed with other modes, thereby making possible normal functioning of this world. Right? If people are purely in one mode only, it becomes abnormal functioning. People cannot relate with each other. For example, two angry people come. Okay, they are in mode of ignorance. They interact with each other. Where is interaction? There is only anger exhibition. So he is in pure mode of ignorance. He cannot interact with a passionate person. He cannot interact with a goodness person. He cannot interact with another ignorant person also. Usually he is purely in one quality only. Right? So for smoother things, there are, you know, mixture of modes. Right? Someone is predominantly in ignorance. Somebody who is predominantly in goodness will come and give him some counseling so that he will cool down. Those things will happen. Ultimately, one should think that I am servant of Krishna and my only possession is loving service to the Lord. Right? This I and mine, all these conceptions are under the influence of a combination of modes, but ultimately one should think I am servant of Krishna. Then he will come out of the influence of this combination of modes. That is pure state of consciousness beyond the influence of modes. Right? So instead of thinking I and mine, one should think that I belong to Krishna. Right? Seventh verse. Dharme charthe cha kame cha.
Dharme charthe cha kame cha.
Gunana yasa yadasu parinishtita.
Yadasu parinishtita.
Gunanam sannikarshoyam.
Gunanam sannikarshoyam.
Shraddharati dhanavaha.
When a person devotes himself to religiosity, economic developments and sense gratification, the faith, wealth and sensual enjoyment obtained by his endeavors display the interaction of the three modes of nature.
Okay, one's dharma, artha, kama, faith, wealth, sense gratification. So all this, right? Dharma, artha, kama, shraddha, rati, dhana. Right? All these are because of an interaction of modes. Because modes are interacting, all these are happening in this material world. So, they reveal the particular situation of a person within the modes of nature. Seeing in which category, what kind of activity he is doing, right? What is he exhibiting? A person is exhibits certain qualities and activities, right? Seeing them, we can understand what combination of modes or, you know, what particular situation he is in under the influence of modes, one can understand. An intelligent person can understand. Pravritti lakshane nishtha pumanyar hi grihashrami swadharme cha anutishtheta gunanam samitir hitsa.
When a man desires sense gratification, being attached to family life, and when he consequently becomes established in religious and occupational duties, the combination of the modes of nature is manifest.
His pravritti and his swadharma. Pravritti and swadharma manifests a combination of modes. Or combination of modes will manifest his pravritti and swadharma. Right? Pravritti is the path of his enjoyment. Then sadharma is certain prescribed duty that he is handling, right? All these are influenced by combination of modes. Now let's see the combination of modes. Specific functions of different modes. So this, and rest of the chapter is just a table, right? And we can explain each of elements elaborately, each of those, but the summary is given here. It's there in your overview notes also. Ninth verse. Purusham sattva samyuktam anumiyat chamadibhi kamadibhi rajo yuktam krodhadya istamasayutam.
A person exhibiting qualities such as self-control is understood to be prominently in the mode of goodness.
Okay, that is here. Goodness, self-control.
Similarly, a passionate person is recognized by his lust. And one in ignorance is recognized by qualities such as anger.
Okay. So if someone is exhibiting these qualities, we can understand he is getting influenced by these modes. This mode predominantly. Next.
Any person, whether man or woman, who worship me with loving devotion, offering his or her prescribed duties unto me without material attachment, it understood to be situated in goodness.
Okay. Next.
When a person worships me by his prescribed duties with the hope of gaining material benefit, his nature should be understood to be in passion. And one who worships me with the desire to commit violence against others is in ignorance.
So, in 10th and 11th verses, Krishna is describing that devotees, means who worship Krishna also, can belong to these modes. Bhakti is never under modes. There is no tamasic bhakti, rajasic bhakti and sattvic bhakti. Bhakti is beyond modes. But the practitioner is in this mode, right? Some may do bhakti to commit certain violence towards others, right? I worship the Lord so that this fellow should get some loss in his business, right? That is tamasic bhakti, right? His bhakti is done with a malicious intent. So, because of the nature of the worshipper, that bhakti can be called tamasic bhakti, but bhakti is ultimately beyond modes, right? So this comes in the teachings of Lord Kapila also, right? Three kinds of bhakti, guni bhakti. Okay, next.
The three modes of material nature, goodness, passion and ignorance, influence the living entity but not me. Manifesting within his mind, they induce the living entity to become attached to material bodies and other created objects. In this way, the living entity is bound up.
So this is the 12th verse, he's reading, that these modes manifest in the mind of a living entity, and living entity becomes attached to his body, right? That's why he is bound up. So we need to understand that the living entity belongs to the Tatastha Shakti of the Lord, marginal potency, right? As the potency of the Lord, as the energy of the Lord, the living entity is supposed to be serving the energetic, right? The eternal object of service of the living entity is Krishna. So energy is meant to be utilized by the energetic. I have some energy. I use this energy to accomplish certain task, right? So energy is my servant. Similarly, we are all energies of Krishna. We are supposed to be servants of Krishna, right? But this is the Tatastha Shakti, this energy. Lord also has another energy, that is material energy, modes, right? When a conditioned soul adopts a material mentality, the modes exert their influence within the jurisdiction of that mentality. So this Tatastha Shakti, living entity, he develops an enjoying mentality, then modes will take over and operate within the jurisdiction of that mentality. Depending on how severely is he deviated from his service to Krishna, that much severely modes will influence him. Like that. But if one purifies one's mind in devotional service, modes can no longer act on him, since they have no influence on the spiritual platform. Modes cannot influence a person on the spiritual platform. So, living entity is marginal energy, and see, modes are like material energy. Material energy can influence this marginal energy as much as the marginal energy allows that material energy to influence him. Like that. Depending on how strong is the desire of a living entity to separately enjoy from Krishna, to that extent modes can influence him. Like that. If someone is deviating slightly, modes will influence him slightly. If someone is totally deviant, right, 180 degrees opposite, modes will completely come. Okay, we'll embrace you. Three embraces from all three sides. Right? Living entity is entrapped like that. Okay, 13th verse.
When the modes of goodness, which is luminous, pure and auspicious, predominates over passion and ignorance, a man becomes endowed with happiness, virtue, knowledge and other good qualities.
This is the goodness quality. Next.
When the modes of passion, which causes attachment, separatism and activity, conquers ignorance and goodness, a man begins to work hard to acquire prestige and fortune. Thus, in the modes of passion, he experiences anxiety and struggle.
So, 13, 14 and 15, in these three verses, Krishna is explaining, when certain mode predominates a person, what will happen to him? Right? When mode of goodness increases, one is endowed with knowledge, happiness, etc. When mode of passion increases, his desires for fame, name, fortune, etc. will increase. Okay? 15th verse is about the increase in ignorance part. Read.
When the mode of ignorance conquers passion and goodness, it covers one's consciousness and makes one foolish and dull. Falling into lamentation and illusion, a person in the mode of ignorance sleeps excessively, indulges in false hopes, and display violence towards others.
Okay. So these modes, right? It's not that they are competing with each other. Depending on the person's nature, a person, because of his mentality, his nature, he's inviting certain mode. You come and influence me. Right? So it's not that when ignorance conquers passion and goodness, it's not that ignorance is that lady, right? So like, say these three are there. It's not that those three are fighting with each other. So she is like stronger than these two, and then she is like defeating them and then taking over one person. Depending on the person's mentality, who will influence her? Who will influence him is decided, right? So person's mentality invites, right? Oh, the predominating deity of ignorance, you come and influence me more. So he'll invite. Then other two will say, this fellow is not calling us. No? If goodness, if he calls the goodness yellow one, yellow one, goodness is white, right? This is black and that is red. Passion is red. So if he invites that white one, right, he'll manifest better qualities. But he is not in a mood to manifest that. Right? And also timings. So different modes become prominent in different timings. When it is dark in the night, ignorance is prominent. Right? When it is like very sunny in the middle of the day, this becomes prominent. Passion becomes prominent. When early morning, Brahma Muhurta, goodness becomes prominent. Right? Huh? So we are always inviting ignorance, maybe. Right? And depending on the place also. For example, this place, like thousands of hours of Bhagavatam Katha happened in this place. So maybe goodness or transcendental vibrations are more there, maybe. You go to some other place, say Hava Mahal, something like that. You go to some other place, Vachukunda Halls, and there ignorance vibrations are prominent. So there, like modes are like, they are just there. Wherever you invite them, you conduct a program, they will come and sit there and give a katha. Right? That's what the modes do. Right? It depends on how the human being conducts himself, how he maintains a place. Right? If we don't keep this place clean, ignorance will come and stay here. If we always keep this place clean, goodness will be prevalent here. Like that.
Competition. So how we can understand?
Yeah, it depends. That modes are competing with each other depending on whom we are inviting. Right?
They are trying to sell. They are advertising much to all the modes.
Ultimately, those three are faithful servants of Maya, illusory energy of Krishna. These three are like three aspects, three facets of illusory energy. Right? Ultimately, those three are one. Like that. Okay, next. 17th verse, 16th verse.
Consciousness becomes clear and the senses are detached from matter, one experiences fearlessness within the material body and detachment from the material mind. You should understand this situation to be the predominance of the modes of goodness, yes, in which one has the opportunity to realize me.
See, in the three verses, 13, 14 and 15, we have seen when mode of goodness or any of these modes becomes predominant, what will happen? What is the effect of predominance of a mode? So that is discussed in 13, 14 and 15. Right? In 16, 17 and 18, what we will see, what are the conditions in which one mode becomes predominant? Right? When Amritishwar is also asking, as I said, we are inviting certain mode. Right? Means we are creating certain circumstance where situation where one mode becomes predominant. What is that situation? That is explained in 16 and 17 and 18. When the consciousness is clear, senses are detached from matter, their mode of goodness becomes more predominant. Right? Next.
You should discern the modes of passion by its symptoms. The distortion of the intelligence becomes of too much activity. The inability of the perceiving senses to disentangle themselves from the mundane object, an unhealthy condition of the working physical organs, and the unsteady perplexity of the mind.
So now, for example, we take a decision now, right? Under the influence of passion, maybe. We may take some decision now and then want to conduct certain project or certain activity, service, in certain way. Right? So the initial passion and over-enthu or excitement in the beginning might permeate, might invite the mode of passion to predominantly take over that whole activity. Right? So then, depending on what kind of decision we take now, what kind of path we have chosen, the entire execution may be filled with passion only. Getting right? So, we are facilitating for mode of passion to come and act. Similarly, we sometimes invite mode of ignorance to come and act. See, same as 18th verse I will read. Once consciousness becomes bewildered and fails to function, one is not aware of objects, mind fails to decide, and ignorance and despair are prominent. For example, somebody has to take a decision. Right? He knows, he doesn't have the intelligence and maturity to take the decision. In the beginning, if he goes to a mature personality and takes his guidance and advice, and he acts based on that guidance and advice, then there is a scope for him that whatever action he is going to do can be done in a better way. Right? For example, I am in mode of ignorance and someone else is there who is in mode of goodness. His taking of decision will influence the activity that I am going to do in a better way and helps the conduction of the entire activity in mode of goodness. And if I take that decision, it may be conducted in a mode of passion or ignorance. So initially, I don't, you know, come out of my ignorance and then take shelter of someone who is in goodness. Then my whole entire activity, I have made it, you know, tinged with ignorance only. Getting right? Just some gross example. So, conditions under which mode of goodness modes become predominant, and the previous one is when certain mode becomes predominant, what happens? These two may look the same, right? And they may be same. There is an overlap also between those two. So when somebody is in ignorance, he acts in certain way, but his actions in certain way will influence the future actions also to be predominated by that mode of ignorance, by certain mode, like that. So, yeah, go ahead.
With the increase of the modes of goodness, the strength of the demigods similarly increases. When passion increases, the demonic people become strong. And with the rise of ignorance, O thou, the strength of the most wicked increases.
Okay. So this is when certain mode becomes prominent, who will be more powered? Who will be more empowered? Right? Who will come under influence? In the 7th canto, 1st chapter, when Narada Muni was asked by Yudhishthira Maharaj, right, whether Lord is partial or impartial, sometimes he seems to be favoring demigods, right, is he partial? So that kind of question was asked in the beginning of 7th canto. Then Narada Muni very elaborately explains that sometimes when the time for mode of ignorance or passion becomes more prominent, demigods will be more influential. Demons will be more influential. Right? But when the time of goodness becomes prominent, devatas are more influential. Right? They come into power. Right? It's all about time, not about Lord's partiality or impartial. Right? So you see, there are phases. For example, when summer becomes prominent, the entire atmosphere is very hot. Right? When the time for monsoon comes, everything will become wet. Okay? When the time of winter comes, everything becomes very cold, cool, right? So it operates according to times. Similarly, when the time of Kali Yuga comes, mode of passion and ignorance become more prominent than goodness. When the time of Satyuga comes, goodness will become more prominent, like that. So the entire cosmos is working under the influence of these modes, right? So the different modes will manifest at different times, like that. Next.
It should be understood that alert wakefulness comes from the mode of goodness, sleep with dreaming from the mode of passion, and deep dreamless sleep from the mode of ignorance. Mm. The fourth state of consciousness pervades these three and is transcendental.
So these are Jagrat, Swapna, Sushupti and Turiya stages. The wakefulness, Jagrati stage is goodness. Then Swapna stage is passion, sleeping with dreams. Then dreamless sleep, right? Deep sleep, that is ignorance. That is good for the body, but it's a state of ignorance. Gaadi parking mein rakha. What is the use of a vehicle? To travel from one place to another place, right? If you are not traveling, if you are not using the vehicle for traveling, you are not utilizing the vehicle. But sometimes parking the vehicle is also needed for the vehicle to get some rest, right? So that's why mode of ignorance, sleep also has its utility, right? Sleep is one of the functions of intelligence, right? But it's an activity in ignorance, right? Then beyond all this is Turiya stage. Lord is always in this stage. He is not influenced by these three stages. In our conditioned state, these three should be there. Wakefulness, sleep with dream, and then dreamless sleep, all these are there. In conditioned state. All these have their own importances. Right? But the stage beyond these modes is this. Turiya stage. Next.
Learned person dedicated to Vedic culture are elevated by the modes of goodness to higher and higher positions. The modes of ignorance, on the other hand, forces one to fall head first into the lower and lower births. Mm. And by the modes of passion, one continues transmigrating through human bodies.
Mm. So, till 19th verse, Krishna explained different qualities of predominance of certain modes, goodness, passion, ignorance. From 20th verse onwards, Krishna also gives the state beyond the modes, beyond the influence of modes. So that will come in the rest of the chapter. That's why the title of this chapter is The Three Modes and Beyond. Okay. Yes, 22.
Those who live this world in the mode of goodness go to the heavenly planet. Those who pass away in the modes of passion remain in the world of human beings. And those dying in the modes of ignorance must go to hell. But those who are free from the influence of all modes of nature come to me.
This is about the destinations after death. 22nd verse. See, beyond is one who is beyond modes will come to me. Okay, those who are under this mode, they will go here. One who conducts himself predominantly mode of goodness, he will go to heavenly planets. Urdhvam gacchanti sattvastha madhye tishtanti rajasah adho gacchanti tamasah. Right? And someone who is beyond the modes, he will come to Krishna. This is that. And one more element in the purport of 21 is Sudras are predominantly in mode of ignorance, categories of people. Vaishyas are a combination of passion and ignorance. Kshatriyas are predominantly in passion. And Brahmanas are predominantly in goodness. Right? That doesn't come in the verses, but it's there in the purport. 23.
Work performed as an offering to me without consideration of the fruit is considered to be in the mode of goodness. Mm. Work performed with a desire to enjoy the result is in the mode of passion. And work impelled by violence and envy is in the mode of ignorance.
Okay. This is something similar to worship only. Earlier, Krishna spoke about worshipping Krishna in three modes. This is executing one's prescribed duties in three modes. Okay, there is no worship element involved here. But in goodness, the prescribed duty or worship is done with an intent to offer the results to Krishna in goodness. But in other modes, that kind of connection with Krishna, connection with Krishna's worship is not very much seen. Okay, next, 24th verse.
Absolute knowledge is in the mode of goodness. Knowledge based on duality is in the mode of passion. And foolish Materialistic knowledge is in the mode of ignorance. Mm. Knowledge based upon me, however, is understood to be transcendental.
Okay. Next.
Residence in the forest is in the mode of goodness. Residence in the town is in the mode of passion. Resident in a gambling house displays the qualities of ignorance. And resident in a place where I reside is transcendental.
That is temple. In the material world it is temple, and it is in the spiritual world, beyond modes. 24th. See, material life is the total absorption there. You are basically, one is totally seeing for sense gratification or some, you know, sleep and all those things. That is knowledge of pure materialistic life. Duality means what is good, what is bad. If I do this, I will go here. If I do this, I will go there. There is kind of discrimination that is there. But the discrimination is also based on one sense gratification only. That is in passion. But here that discrimination is also lost. Right? In mode of ignorance. Yeah, it's mode of goodness. In material life, yeah, in the yeah, it's like deep, deep ignorance, yeah. So there is one nice statement in the end of 24th purport. I'll read out. Within the modes, the conditioned souls are trying to satisfy senses, or else they are trying to free themselves from sense gratification. But they cannot directly engage themselves in their constitutional liberated activities until they come to the transcendental position of Krishna consciousness. Right? As long as one is within the modes of goodness or passion or ignorance, either they absorb in sense gratification or they want to free themselves from sense gratification. Like something like goodness people. But beyond this sense gratification, saying yes or no to sense gratification is bhakti to Krishna, where you think of only sense gratification of Krishna, not personal sense gratification. Right? 25th verse. 25th we have studied, right? Here also, something about family life is there. Family life is certainly full of false pride, false hopes, false affection, lamentation, illusion. Since the family connection is squarely resting on the bodily concept of life, the very opposite of sense self-realization. Definitely, this is not referring to Krishna conscious grihastha life, a responsible grihastha life led by pure Vaishnavas. So that is different from this family life. This family life is grihamedhi, right? Not grihastha life. You need to have that discrimination. Like that. Manniketam refers to Lord's own abode in the spiritual world or Lord's temples. Right, residence at a place where Lord resides, that is beyond modes. That's mentioned, right? So that residence could be a temple or the spiritual world. Please read 26th.
A worker free of attachment is in the mode of goodness. A worker blinded by personal desire is in the mode of passion. And a worker who has completely forgotten how to tell right from wrong is in the mode of ignorance. But a worker who has taken shelter of me is understood to be transcendental to the modes of nature.
Yes, next.
Faith directed towards spiritual life is in the mode of goodness. Faith rooted in fruitive work is in the mode of passion. Faith residing in irreligious activities is in the mode of ignorance. But faith is in my devotional service is purely transcendental.
Faith in different modes. Next.
Food that is wholesome, pure and obtained without difficulty is in the mode of goodness. Food that gives immediate pleasure to the senses is in the mode of passion. And food that is unclean and causes distress is in the mode of ignorance.
Food offered to the Lord is beyond modes, prasadam. Now you don't have to think whether my food is in goodness or passion or ignorance. Our food is always in, always beyond modes, but we may accept it in modes. We may passionately eat prasad. We may ignorantly eat prasad, but the whole process of eating prasad is beyond modes. Okay, next.
Happiness derived from the self is in the mode of goodness. Happiness based on sense gratification is in the mode of passion. And happiness based on delusion and degradation is in the mode of ignorance. But the happiness found within me is transcendental.
So these are all activities related to the Lord. Happiness found in activities related to the Lord. That transcendental. Like that.
Therefore, material substance, place, result of activity, time, knowledge, work, the performer of work, faith, state of consciousness, species of life and destination after death are all based on the three modes of material nature.
Next.
O best of human beings, all state of material being are related to the interaction of the enjoying soul and material nature. Whether seen, heard of, or only conceived within the mind, they are without exception constituted on the modes of nature.
So basically this in the material world, conditioned souls are interacting with the material nature. Enjoying soul is interacting with prakriti, right? All this is happening under the supervision of modes, right? Who are working under the supervision of Krishna? Okay, maya adhyakshena prakriti suvate sacharacharam. Maya adhyakshena prakriti. Okay, prakriti consists of these modes also. So that's how Krishna explained about the functionings of modes and so many things under the modes till 31st verse. From 32 onwards, Krishna is speaking about how to conquer these modes. One can conquer these modes by bhakti. That is the essence of the next 5 verses. 32. Eta samsrutaya pumso
gunakarma
nibandhana yeneme nirjita saumya gunajivena jittajah bhakti yogena mannishtho madbhavaya prapadyate.
O gentle Udhav, all these different phases of conditioned life arise from work born of the modes of material nature. The living entities who conquer these modes manifested from the mind can dedicate himself to me by the process of devotional service and thus attain pure love for me.
One who conquers the mind and the modes, or the modes manifested by the mind, can dedicate oneself to Krishna. Right? What kind of modes will manifest in a person? Depending on what his mind desires. Right? If the mind is desiring something nonsensical, ignorance is influencing him. Like that. So more mind manifests the modes means that. Then 33.
Tasmad deham imam labdhva jnana vijnana sambhavam gunasangam vinirduya mam bhajantu vichakshanaha.
Important verse.
Therefore, having achieved this human form of life, which allow one to develop full knowledge, those who are intelligent should free themselves from the all contamination of the modes of nature and engage exclusively in the loving service to me.
Tasmad deham imam labdhva. Deham. What deham? Krishna is speaking about human body. Labdhva. Once you attain this human body, which is jnana vijnana sambhavam. Sambhavam means the place of generation of jnana, theoretical knowledge, vijnana, realized knowledge. Only in human body you can understand the theory and realize it. In no other body can one understand the theory or forget about realization. Yeah. So, guna sangam vinirdhuya. Give up this association of modes. Mam bhajantu vichakshanaha. If you are a vichakshana, intelligent human being, then mam bhajantu. You worship me only. Right? That's how Krishna says. Next,
nissango mam bhajet vidvan apramatto jitendriyah rajastamascha bhijayet sattvasamsevaya munihi.
A wise sage free from all material association, and unbewildered should subdue his senses and worship me. He should conquer the modes of passion and ignorance by engaging himself only with things in the modes of goodness.
So Krishna, in 32 and 33, he emphasized that one should go beyond the modes. One should conquer these modes. And he also said, by bhakti you can conquer the modes. Right? So in 34th verse, he is giving the step-by-step procedure for it. How to conquer the modes? First conquer the lower modes. First come beyond the influence of ignorance and passion. Establish yourself in goodness first. Right? So after coming to goodness, what you have to do? Give up that goodness also. That he explains in the 35th verse. 34th verse he said, go beyond the passion and ignorance. Come to mode of goodness. Right? So 35. Sattvam cha abhijayet yukto nairapekshena shantada sampadyate guner mukto jivo jivam vihayamam. So by conquering or subduing senses and worshipping Krishna, if one first subdues the lower modes called passion and ignorance, and he comes to goodness slowly. Then after coming to goodness, what he has to do? Read the 35th translation.
Then being fixed in devotional service, the sage should also conquer the material modes of goodness by indifference towards the modes.
By indifference. Indifference word is used here. Right?
Thus specified within his mind, the spirit soul freed from the modes of nature, give up the very cause of his conditioned life and attain me.
So one has to be indifferent towards the modes and then rise above goodness also. Nirapeksha. Nirapeksha is indifference. Okay. Now after that, finally, what will one do? One will experience Lord's form. Jivo jiva vinirmukto gunaischa shaya sambhavaihi mayaiva brahmana purno nabahirna antarascharet.
Freed from the subtle conditioning of the mind and from the modes of nature born of material consciousness, the living entity becomes completely satisfied by experiencing my transcendental form. He no longer searches for enjoyment in the external energy, nor does he contemplate or remember such enjoyment within himself.
So he no longer searches for enjoyment which is available under the influence of modes. He goes beyond it. So one has to conquer these modes by doing devotional service. One has to gradually give up these modes by first giving the lower modes and then coming to goodness, and then from there. It's like mode of goodness is like a runway. From there the plane takes off. Right? Without going on the runway, how will that plane take off? So cultivating mode of goodness is also very important. Right? So for one's devotional service. So we'll go back to this slide. These are the qualities of goodness, passion and ignorance. So Krishna is, at the end of the chapter, he is recommending that one has to do devotional service and conquer the modes. And how will that conquering of modes happen? Gradually. So now we see the qualities of ignorance and passion. Krishna is recommending that first you conquer these two. When we see anger in ourselves, greed, violence, then false showing of tendency, lamentation, unhappiness, depression, etc. When we see these tendencies, while practicing bhakti, one has to focus on these anarthas, and Bhagavatam gives several formulas of how to come out of it. Bhagavatam explains about several examples who overcame those anarthas, right? And slowly one has to work on these and come to this stage. Right? Then he will understand, do I have so much of desire for gain, name, fame? Do I have so much of eagerness to hear other people glorifying me? Right? Do I have so much tendency to justify whatever stupid actions that I am doing? So one needs to understand all this and slowly work on that. Then come to this level. So one should come to a position where he will be able to control the mind. Okay, mind senses, one increases his tolerance, one increases his discrimination, one has willingness to do some austerity, one always speaks truth, no diplomacy, okay, merciful, careful, steady. So all this, one has to work on improving these qualities, and one has to work on removing these qualities, right? Once one predominantly exhibits these qualities, from there one can take off, one can go beyond the modes. That's the gradual process that Krishna is doing. And by sticking to the path of devotional service, slowly one will be able to overcome this. It's not like black and white. So far I am in modes, I start chanting, I am beyond modes. Not like that. It's a gradual process, transition. We are all in transition phase, work in progress. Transition is happening. It's not that as soon as you chant, these are not steps also. We have to carefully work on it. It doesn't happen that, oh, you morning 5 o'clock, you just take your bead bag, sit there and start chanting and start crying. Crying will not happen immediately, right? You have to chant, 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 chant. One day one drop of tear may fall after several decades or centuries or lifetimes, right? But this is all very short period compared to the scale of eternity, right? So we are in transition phase. We need to understand that and gradually work on things. Why nothing is happening to me in spite of doing some? Are we doing going by step? Do we know steps first? Do we know the stages? Right? Are we working on those stages? Right? Then transcending those modes will happen. Okay, we will begin the next verse, next chapter. Quite heavy chapter. Heavy for me. Aila Gita. So before that, we will read the 34th verse again of 25th chapter. Nissango mam bhajet vidvan apramatto jitendriya. So Krishna recommended that one has to be jitendriya, conquer the modes, conquer the senses. Apramatto, one has to be very alert. Nissango, one has to be free from material association. Then bhajet vidvan, in that state one should be worshipping the Supreme Lord, right? So Krishna said one should attentively worship Him, avoiding bad association. Avoiding bad association is nissanga. Attentive worship is apramatta. Jitendriya means one has to conquer the senses also, with sense control. So Krishna recommended this. However, a wise person, while contemplating on his means of success, he should also contemplate on obstacles to success. He is thinking about how do I reach there. He is focused there. How do I travel there? But he should also be conscious of what kind of obstacles may come. Right? When I am jumping from here to there, somebody may put a bamboo stick and then I will fall off. Right? One should think like that. Obstacles he should contemplate. What is the greatest obstacle? Association with opposite sex. Association with woman is the greatest obstacle. Right? This Nissango. So Krishna focuses on this verse and in particular this word and gives this example of how to avoid bad association, unfavorable association that becomes a threat to one's devotional service. And towards the end of this chapter, Krishna emphasizes a lot on saintly association, devotee association. Right? So the difference between Bhagavad Gita and Uddhava Gita is this. That in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains so many philosophical concepts. But in Uddhava Gita, along with an explanation of philosophical concepts, Krishna quotes some historical incidents also related to those concepts. He says, you be detached. With detachment, you wander. Immediately, he says, Avadhut Brahman is there. He had 24 gurus. One story comes up. And within that story, there are so many sub-stories. Kurari bird, this happened to Kurari bird. This happened to Pigeon, like that. Then Avanti Brahman, then Aila Gita, right? Pingala story. So many things will come up like that. So that we can assimilate the subject matter better. And Uddhava Gita happened after Bhagavad Gita. Advanced course. And Chaitanya Charitamrita happened after this Uddhava Gita also. That's updated version. Right? This is 5000 years old, Uddhava Gita. Chaitanya Charitamrita is 500 years old. So Krishna came in the form of Mahaprabhu, I spoke Bhagavad Gita, I spoke Uddhava Gita, still these people cannot digest it. Let me come and practically demonstrate things and people will learn better. So Krishna speaks about so many things, about Varnashram, this and that in Uddhava Gita, but duties of Brahmachari, duties of Sannyasi, all that. But Mahaprabhu comes in there, you chant the holy names. He emphasizes only on some selective things, right, and demonstrates them also. That become more relevant for Kali Yuga people. Updated version. Most updated. Proposed purports are most updated, he says. Recent update. Okay. We will read the first verse of Aili Gita.
Shri Bhagavan Vacha Mallakshanam Imam Kayam Labdhva Madharma Asthita Anandam Paramatmanam Atmastham Samupaitimam.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, having achieved this human form of life, which affords one the opportunity to realize me, and being situated in my devotional service, one can achieve me, the reservoir of all pleasure and the supreme soul of all existence, residing within the heart of every living being.
So in the first two verses, Krishna is speaking about the condition of a liberated soul. Why suddenly this is coming? Earlier we discussed about one link. There in the end of 25th chapter, Krishna emphasized on Nisanga, apramatta devotional service. Means one has to be alert and one has to carefully avoid unfavorable association, especially of women. That's why Aila Gita is coming. Then why is this coming? The condition of a liberated soul. First verse explains that human birth plus devotional service will make one attain Krishna. That is the essence of first verse. Right? Why he is saying? Because Krishna said, even a liberated soul also should fear this association of women. Not to speak of a practitioner. A practitioner should carefully avoid modes and bad association and worship Krishna. But even a perfected soul, even a liberated soul also should carefully avoid association of women. So to say that, Krishna is putting these two verses in the beginning of the chapter to explain the condition of a liberated soul. He says, by bad association, unfavorable association, especially of the opposite sex, even liberated souls also can fall down. But by saintly association, one can save one from sex attraction. So this is the theme of the entire chapter. Avoid unfavorable association, get into favorable association. That is these two lines which are there, right, these are explained throughout the chapter. So one can be saved from sex attraction by association with saintly persons who awaken one's real spiritual intelligence. If one lacks spiritual intelligence, he doesn't understand the ill effects of bad association. But if one is in saintly association, he will have knowledge, he will have intelligence. Right? Sa uttama shloka mahan mukhachito vidhasva karana yutameshame varaha. What is that? Next verse, I always forget that. Smritim punar vismrita tattvartvanam. No, smritim punar vismrita tattvartvanam kuyoginam. How does it begin? Sa uttama shloka mahan mukhachito bhavat padam bhoja sudhakana anila. Smritim punar vismrita tattvartvanam. Third verse of Prithumara's prayers. When a pure devotee speaks, because Lord is sitting in the heart of a pure devotee, the saffron dust particles of that lotus feet of the Lord will emanate from the mouth of a pure devotee, and smritim punar vismrita tattvartmanam, it will revive the remembrance of one's constitutional position as eternal servant of Krishna, and he will come back to his normal condition. Till that time, this bad association and fall down will happen. That's why hearing in saintly association is very important. That's what Krishna also repeatedly emphasizes in this chapter. Second verse, another important verse. Gunamaya jiva yonya vimukto jnana nishthaya guneshu maya matreshu drishyamane shvavastutaha
वर्तमानोपि न पुमान् युज्यते वस्तुभिर्गुणैः.
A person fixed in transcendental knowledge is freed from conditional life by giving up his false identification with the products of the material modes of nature. Seeing these products are simply illusion, he avoids entanglement with the modes of nature, although constantly among them. Because the modes of nature and their products are simply not real, he does not accept them.
So here Krishna speaks about, mentioned these two words, jnana nishthaya. Jnana nishthaya means fixed in jnana, transcendental knowledge, plus guna vimukta, guna mayaya jiva yonya vimukto, vimukta from gunas, being freed from this material modes. What does it mean? To be freed from material modes means seeing them actually, seeing their actual condition, that is seeing their products as illusion, illusory. So by being guna vimukta, freed from modes, and by fixed in transcendental knowledge, one will avoid entanglement. So this is the state of a condition of a liberated soul. So see, guna vimukta and jnana nishtaya essentially mean that a liberated soul sees everything as Lord's property. When I see some object, if I am a liberated soul, if I have these two qualities, if I have transcendental knowledge, jnana nishtaya and guna vimukta, if I am freed from modes, what I will see? I will not identify that object as something meant for my sense gratification. I will understand its actual nature. So the curtain of illusion is removed by transcendental knowledge. If the curtain of illusion is there, then we will see that as an object meant for my pleasure or my pain. Otherwise, we will see that object as Krishna's energy meant to be utilized in Krishna's service. Right? This is Lord's property. Maya will come and tempt us. No, this is not Lord's property. This is meant for your sense gratification. Right? This person is meant for your sense gratification. He is supposed to serve you, not Krishna. Maya will tempt that. But if one is jnana nishtaya, he is fixed in transcendental knowledge, he will reject those proposals of Maya. He will not be succumbed to the temptations of that Maya. He will say, what you are saying? I know, I have transcendental knowledge. I am jnana nishtaya. I can understand that this is Krishna's energy. This is Krishna's property meant to be utilized in Krishna's service. So he will reject all the proposals given by Maya. Then no entanglement. Maya cannot touch him. Illusion will slowly lose grip over such a person. We have heard in previous chapters, right? By being jnana nishtaya, by being guna vimukta, by being dedicated to Guru's orders and executing his instructions and conducting oneself according to what he has heard from bona fide sources, illusion, maya will lose grip over that person. So he remains pure in spirit, pure in spite of maya's temptations to make him a thief. Maya, what does maya do? Maya will make him a thief. Everything is Lord's property. If I am taking it for my enjoyment, I am a thief. Right? I do that under the influence of Maya. What does Maya do to everyone? It makes everyone a thief. Right? Who enters a jail? A thief will enter a jail. So Maya's duty is to make everyone thief and keep them in jail. Right? So devotee means he has to unlock. You are not a thief. You are a servant. So it will, devotees will do that. Next, third verse. Now you see, here, this make him a thief, in context of this chapter, Aila Gita especially, it's about enjoying opposite sex. Now whenever a pure soul sees the opposite sex, he will not have the mentality of gratifying his own senses, right? When a pure karmi sees, say, woman, what he will think is, she is meant for my sense gratification. When a karmakandi, right, someone who is following the Vedic ritual so much, when he sees a woman, he sees, except my wife, all other women are like my mothers. right? One who is aligned towards Vedic principles and all, that person will think like that. When a Mayavadi sees a woman, what he will think? It is Maya. It doesn't exist. For him, there is no factual existence of anything. Right? That is Mayavadi. But when a devotee sees a woman, he thinks that she is Gopi of Krishna. Right? But that consciousness is very difficult. At least you should be like Karma Gandhis. Understanding that a woman is a mother. Right? And see, for a grihastha, except his wife, everyone is a mother. For a brahmachari, everyone is mother. Brahmachari and sannyasi has no wives. So every single lady is a mother. Right? And deserves respect. So here, a thief mentality is what? To take that for one's own sense gratification. Right? Again, this is when it translates to woman, it's like man, for man, woman is a woman. For woman, man is a woman. Like that. So it's basically speaking about opposite sex. I can connect. Oh, it's coming there. So now Naranarayan Rishi are there. Even when so many women, along with the Cupid, with his flower arrows, even when they came, they could not influence Naranarayan Rishi. Right? On top of it, he gave Urvasi, take this Urvasi. That Urvasi only is the heroine of this episode. Right? So Naranarayan Rishi were not influenced like that. So a devotee who is in this consciousness are the Lord, Naranarayan Rishi. Tatsrishta srishta srishteshu konvakhandata dhikuman. Rishim Narayanam rute yoshit mayeva maya. Where does it come? Who knows? Kapil Dev section. Except Naranarayan Rishi, who else could stand the temptation of opposite sex? Right? But a devotee can stand the temptation of opposite sex. Like for example, Arjuna. Same Urvasi proposed to Arjuna. You are like my grandmother's grandmother, grandmother. How can I have any connection with you? I worship you. I call you mother. What kind of person are you? Okay, we don't have that kind of relation. Right? Grandmother, grandchild, that kind of relation don't exist in heavenly planets. It's bona fide if you enjoy with me here. Still he says, no, I cannot enjoy. So, etad ishanam ishasya prakriti stopi tadgunai na yujyate sadatmaste yatha buddhi tadashraya. Right? So, a devotee or a lord can never be tempted to the temptations of maya and become thieves. Right? So, now, third verse. Sangam na kuryad asatam. Sishnodara tripam kvachit tasyanugastamasyandhe patatyandhanugandhavat. This is verse. I didn't do anything there. Yes, read.
One should never associate with materialists, those dedicated to the gratifying their genitals and bellies. By following them, one falls into the deepest pit of darkness, just like a blind man who follows another blind man.
So, it's a very beautiful verse. Sangam na kuryat asatam. Don't take the sangha of asatam. Here this fellow is asatam. All these people are taking the sangha of this asatam. Why one should not take the association of asata? Sishna udara triptam. Right? Sishna is genitals. Udara is belly. They are simply dedicated to satisfying their bellies and genitals. Right? Tasya anugas tamasyandhe. Tasya anugas, if you take association of him, if you follow him, what will happen? Tamasi andhe patati. You will just go deep into the dark well of material existence. Andhanugata, andha anugadha ivat. Right? When an andha, blind man, anuga andha. If he follows another andha, they will go into blind well. Similarly, if one person follows the materialistic people, he also goes into dark well of material existence. Very graphic verse. Mahat sevan dvaram ahur vimukte tamo dvaram vyushitam sanghi sangam. Right? Mahantaste samachitta prashanta vimanyavah suhrudas sadhavoye. So these are some very grave verses that Krishna is speaking in Uddhava Gita. So from fourth verse onwards, he gives an explanation about Aila Gita. 4 to 6 are the background of Pururava. Aila is Pururava. Why Pururava is called Aila? Okay. Son of Ila is correct. He entered 11th Varsha, that's why he's called Aila. That is Sudyumna. Sudyumna, right? Sudyumna. Sudyumna, their mother. Ila. Ila became Sudyumna. Buddha. Buddha marries Ila. Then their son is Pururava. He is like the main person in the dynasty of Moon. Right? Anyways, huh? Why are you laughing? Okay. Aila Samrad Imam Gatham Agayata Bruhat Shira Bruhat Shrava Bruhat Shrava. Where does this word come? Bruhat Shrava. Okay, where? Bruhat Shrava. Okay. Anywhere else? Puranjan also comes? Bruhat Shrava. You can check. Urvasi viraham muhyam nirvinna soka samyame.
The following song was sung by the famous emperor Pururava. When deprived of his wife Urvashi, he was at first bewildered, but by controlling his lamentation he began to feel detachment.
Read the next verse also.
When she was leaving him, even though he was naked, he ran after her just like a madman and called out in great distress, "Oh my wife, oh terrible lady, please stop."
He's getting excited.
And she was leaving him, even though he was naked, he ran after her just like a madman and called out in distress, "Oh my wife, oh terrible lady, please stop."
Continue. Don't stop, continue.
Although for many years Pururava had enjoyed sex pleasure in evening hours, still he was not satisfied by such insignificant enjoyment. His mind was so attracted to Urvashi that he did not notice how the nights were coming and going. King
Stop now. So we need to discuss. So why Pururava's story is coming here? Why Sukadeva Goswami did not complete in 9th canto? He just said he went to the planet of Urvashi and then enjoyed there. That is the happy ending he gave, which is very appealing to materialistic people. Right? People, when they read the section of Bhagavatam, they will think that that is the culmination of Bhagavatam, or, you know, wow, it's so nice. They may think like that. Why he did not conclude this story here and why it is coming in 11th canto? Any guesses? We cannot maintain confidentiality. We have to reveal this. That is the gist of the story. We tell the whole story and then the lesson you be. Okay. Okay. Thematic compilation. Okay. Okay. Anything else? Any other reasons? So, somebody is thinking, what Gita is that, we don't know. Okay, maybe. So, one reason, popular reason that is given is, Sukadeva Goswami was, in the 9th canto, he was describing the dynasties of sun and moon. Right? He was giving more importance to the flow of, sun and moon dynasties. Right? Not giving, getting so many details, giving so many details. That's one small reason. Another reason is, towards the end of 9th canto, Sukadeva Goswami is so eager to describe Krishna's pastimes. That's why he summarized Ram's pastimes also in just 2 chapters. Right? He was very eager at that point. So these were some of the reasons mentioned. Huh? Once Radhika Valla Prabhu shared this. Right? He was, must be Radha Govind Maharaj or someone. So here, Pururava, you know the story, we need not remind again. That like Urvasi comes with 2 lambs and then she says, if you don't protect these lambs, I will run away. I will leave you and you should never appear naked in front of me. And although he was naked, he was running to protect the lambs, and then finally he gave darshan of his Virat Roop to Urvasi, and then Urvasi said, I will leave you. Right? So love or lust will make one blind, may make one blind and shy. People will lose all shy. He was just running naked behind. Oh, terrible lady, please stop, like that. But what makes Pururava's story most important for us is, Pururava's story is just a story of frustrated love. What happens to frustrated lovers? We have seen all Bollywood and Tollywood movies, right? I don't know about Hollywood, but but at least Indian movies. If in frustrated love, if someone is in mode of ignorance, he will take to intoxication. He will take a daru bottle and then start singing songs about his lover. Oh, you left from me. So that is like mode of ignorance. Frustrated love in mode of ignorance. Then if someone is in mode of passion, and if he has a frustrated loving experience, what he will do? He will try to aggressively enjoy his senses. Right? He wants to maintain connection with more other people, and then he will enjoy more aggressively. Right? With greater force. Someone who is in mode of goodness, he will develop detachment. Right? In the context of frustrated love. But what will frustrated love lead to when someone is beyond modes? He will love Krishna. So he belongs to the 4th category. He dedicated himself to Krishna. When he had a frustrated love with Urvasi, he did not take a daru bottle, he did not try to enjoy with greater force other women, and he did not become detached simply. What he did was, he did devotional service of Krishna. That's why his story is there in Bhagavatam. Right? It's very important. So he took to devotional service. So other lovers are different. Pingala also. She also had a frustrated lover, whatever. She was expecting some kind of reciprocation with the customers, and she did not get. And she turned towards Krishna. She developed feelings of detachment. Means she came to mode of goodness, and he transcended goodness also. She dedicated herself to Krishna. Santam samipi ramanam ratipradam. So, Supreme Lord is directly there for me, giving me enjoyment. Why should I unnecessarily bother to take enjoyment from local men? So that was her consciousness. That's why their stories are very important. They found their place in Bhagavatam. So from 7th verse onwards, till 28th verse, Aila Gita, the song of Pururava, is described. Aila Uvacha, Ahome Moha Vistaraha, कामकश्मलचेतसः देव्याग्रहीतकण्ठस्य नायुः खण्ड इमे स्मृतः.
King Aila said, alas, just see the extent of my delusion. This goddess was embracing me and held my neck in her grip. My heart was so polluted by lust that I had no idea how my life was passing.
Next verse. Naham vedabhinirmuktah suryo va bhayudiyo muyam mushito varsha paganam bataha nigatanyuta.
That lady cheated me so much that I did not even see the rising or setting of the sun? Alas, for so many years, I passed my days in vain.
Mm. So the theme of these two verses is, he is regretting that he wasted his time waste, right? So his heart was polluted by lust, so he did not notice the time passing. So she cheated me, he says like that. I did not notice even sunrise and sunset. Because he is always sleeping with her, he is not noticing sunrise and sunset. Right? That's why it is said that one should not sleep when sun is rising and when the sun is setting. Right? So they are not the times for sleeping. But he is always sleeping in ignorance. That's why he is not noticing time. So lust makes one lose his determination to follow the Vedic duties also. Being a Kshatriya, being a great king, right? Being the most important king in the Moon Dynasty, he is responsible to do these morning duties and all, but he is absorbed in these lusty affairs. Right? Those who are Krishna conscious utilize every moment in Lord's service, Lord's loving service. But here is a person who could not utilize every moment, or most moments he wasted without engaging himself in service. So 9 to 13, how Urvasi humiliated Pururava is described. 9th verse. Aho me atma sammoho, yena atma yoshitam krutaha, krida amrgas chakravarti, naradeva sikhamani.
Alas, although I am supposed to be a mighty emperor, the crown jewel of all king on this earth, just see how my bewilderment has rendered me a toy animal in the hands of woman.
So Aila is Chakravarti. He is an emperor, great emperor. He is Naradeva Sikhamanihi. Nara is human being. Naradeva means king of humans. Naradeva Sikhamani means the best of all kings. Right? He is supposed to be like a lion, mighty lion. When you see a lion, terror comes in the heart of everyone. But when you see a toy lion, will everyone fear? Will anyone fear? You want to do whatever you do, toy lion cannot do anything. Kridamraga. So this fellow, who is supposed to be like a lion, he became a toy lion, toy animal in the hands of Urvashi. So he is regretting for that. Right? That is how she humiliated our Pururava. So he became a toy woman, Kridamruga. Then 10th verse. Saparichadam Atmanam Hitvatranam Iveshwaram Yantim Striyam Chavagamam Chanvagamam Nagna Utmatta Vadrudan.
I was a powerful lord with great opulence. That woman gave me up as if I were no more than an insignificant blade of grass. And still, naked and without shame, I followed her, crying out to her like a madman.
So here he is comparing himself to Trina. So many analogies he is giving to explain his degraded position. Right? So Hitva Trinam Iveshwaram. Although I am an Ishwara, the controller of at least my kingdom, my dynasty, I am an important person, still she made me like a trina, like a blade of grass. Right? You manifested yourself in a different thing which I did not want. I leave you. Get lost. She just, like a blade of grass, she just threw him away. Like that. So, I am following shamelessly her, like a madman. So he is regretting for that. So Trinadapi Sunichena can happen in the association of opposite sex. Right? So Trinadapi Sunichena. Next, Aristotle says, if you want to be weaker than yourself, maintain connection with a woman. Right? Like that. Kutastasya nubhavasyat teja ishatvam evava yonvagacham striyam yatnim खरवत पादताडितः खरवत खरा इज अ डोंकी यस खरवत पादताडितः व्हेन अ शी डोंकी किक्स द मेल डोंकी इट्स पोजीशन विल बी लाइक दिस रीड द ट्रांसलेशन
Where are my so-called great influence, power and sovereignty, just like an ass being kicked in the face by his she-ass, I ran after that woman who had already given me up.
Okay, lust can make richest and strongest people into beggars, right? A donkey, an ass in pursuit of sense gratification will be kicked constantly by she-ass. I have become like that. Even Mother Rukmini, when she had that argument with Krishna in 60th chapter of 10th canto, so Rukmini compares all the other kings, right? They are like asses, dogs, cats, slaves in the houses of women, right? You are asking me to, you know, select them. You are saying that I have made a mistake by choosing you. So she kind of defeats all the arguments given by Krishna. Like that. Even Mother Sita, she compares Ravana to be like a blade of grass. Get lost. Like that. 12th verse. Kim vidyaya kim tapasa. Kim tyage na shrute nava. Kim vivikte na maunena. Sribhiryasya manohritam.
What is the use of a big education or the practice of austerities and renunciation, and what is the use of studying religious scriptures, of living in solitude and silence, if after all that one's mind is stolen by a woman?
Vidya, tapa, tyaga, shruta, viveka, mauna. So all these are useless if one's mind is stolen by a woman, right? Vidya is education, tapa is austerity, tyaga is renunciation, shruta is being learned in scriptures, viveka is sharp intelligence, mauna is doing that mauna or silence. All this become useless if one is thinking of opposite sex all the while, right? So in the fourth canto, one beautiful analogy is given in that Prithvi Maharaj episode. There is a lake, big lake, pond, right? On top of it, on the bank of it, there are so many grasses, right? They are like uselessly growing, sucking up all the waters of the lake, right? Similarly, the contemplation of sense objects, contemplation of opposite sex, will render all that is acquired by a man useless. So vidya, tapa, tyaga, everything will become void if he is thinking of opposite sex. Like that. Very grave topics. So one who hankers after a woman's association certainly spoils his spiritual progress. Right? If one worships the example of liberated gopis of Vrindavan, who accepted Lord Krishna as their paramour, one can free one's mental activities from the contamination of lust. Right? One has to follow in the footsteps of the gopis. Gopi bhartu patakamalayor dasa dasa anudasa. So, next. See this one image I got. For example, somebody is driving a car, right? Another fellow is sitting next to him. So mind can impel us but cannot compel us. So it's if another person is sitting next to the driver, if he's giving him directions, you go here, you go there, you go here, there, now take a left turn, take a right turn. It's ultimately the steering wheel is in the driver's hand. It's up to him whether to take the suggestion of the person sitting next to him or not. Right? He cannot blame the person who is sitting next to him. Steering wheel is in his hand, right? Similarly, the soul is there. So we are sitting there, driving the vehicle. Mind may give us ideas. Do this sense gratification, do that sense gratification. Okay, go here, go there. Right? If one has sharp intelligence, he can neglect the suggestions of the mind and with the steering wheel in the hand, he can go ahead in the right direction. If he takes the suggestion of another person sitting in the car who is the super soul. in the car of body, right, where the steering wheel is in the living entity's hand, mind, material mind is giving suggestions, and super soul is also giving suggestions. We need to take suggestions of super soul, not the material mind. Right? We need to understand that steering wheel is in our hands. Next verse, 13th verse. Svartasya kovidam bhinmam murkham panditamaninam yoham ishvaratam prapya stribhirgo kharavad jitaha.
To hell with me. I am such a fool that I didn't even know what was good for me, although I arrogantly thought I was highly intelligent. Although I achieved the exalted position of a lord, I allowed myself to be conquered by a woman as if I were a bullock or a jackass.
So now he is identifying himself as an ignorant person. Murkham pandita vaininam. I am actually a murkha, but I am thinking that I am a pandit. Right? I am as good as a bullock. Although bullock is powerful, you just tie with the rope, it is under the control of bullock car driver, jackass, another ass. Right? He was thinking like that. Basically here, the emphasis is that one should not, if one has some problem, he can discuss it with some superior devotee and then try to overcome that problem. Right? By taking guidance of a spiritual master, saintly spiritual master, the lusty propensity can gradually be removed. Right? And one can understand the terrible, contemptible nature of material sense gratification. So, one needs to take guidance. Right? If we are not humble, we will be humiliated. Like bullock or jackass. One has to take humble position and take advice of someone, take guidance of someone, depend on what guidance that Prabhupada is giving in the books, depending on what guidance Krishna is giving in Uddhava Gita, one has to take those suggestions and conduct oneself. Like that. It's like going into the quicksand. When lust is just overcoming a person, it's like going into quicksand. So, when somebody is just being grasped by the quicksand, right, he's getting drowned into it, he himself cannot come out. Someone has to put a thread or some stem and then pull him out. Right? Spiritual master should pull him out. Right? But this fellow should have the humility to cry out for help. If he thinks that I can come out of my own efforts, then he will be drowned only. So some of these anarthas are like very powerful. So one has to take shelter of a spiritual master. That is recommended here. Then 14th verse. Sevato varsha puganme urvasya adharashavam natrupyatyatma bhukkamo vahnir abhuti bhiryatha.
Even after I had served the so-called nectar of the lips of Urvashi for many years, my lusty desires kept rising again and again within my heart and were never satisfied, just like a fire that can never be extinguished by the oblations of ghee poured into the flames.
So, just you put some oblations into the ghee, okay? Just keep pouring. That will not, make the fire come down, right? Fire will only increase. Similarly, just by continuously engaging in sense gratification, it doesn't mean that it will go one day. Right? It will not happen like that. Prabhupada gives that example of a pregnant woman. So a woman is there, she engages in sense gratification, she becomes pregnant. Right? And while giving birth to the child, unable to tolerate that labor pain, she will say, I will never engage in sense gratification. But later again, the material nature is so powerful that it will induce that woman to again engage in sense gratification and again become pregnant and again experience that labor pain. Right? It's not that continuously engaging in sense gratification will automatically relieve one from the tendency to gratify one's senses. So lust is insatiable. that is explained here. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, it is lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with material mode of passion and later transformed into birth. Kama yesha krodha yesha rajoguna samudbhavaha mahashano mahapapma vidhi yena eha vairinam. The greatest enemy in this material world is this lust born out of my passion, like that. So there are two characteristics of lust. One is here insatiable, second is irresistible. Right, when the things, when the force, the upsurge of that desire just comes up, one cannot resist it. Right? Even Vishwamitra got also succumbed to this woman, like that. So by indulging, it will not get pacified. Right? Next, 15th verse. So what is the solution?
It's never satisfied, but it comes that you engage more and more, some verse coming, verse came.
Yeah, that example is also given. Take 10 liters of ghee and then put it on fire, it will automatically come down. So that's like, no. It's by constantly giving inputs to the fire, it will only come up. See, at regulated intervals, like if you constantly keep on supplying fuel, it will never come down, right? But if you supply with so much fuel, right, then it will come down, but that coming down is not leading to a very pleasing end, right? That is not the right way of stopping it, getting right. Yeah, correct, exactly. Prabhupada writes like that. It's not a recommendation. It's not a recommendation. Someone has a point? This topic is such that...
So in that it's also mentioned that it's not that always that person will survive also. By doing so much of sense gratification, he will lead to so many disease, he may die also. And it's not always the case, he will get, he will come to this point also. So that was also mentioned in the purport.
Basically, that's not a recommendation. 15th. Yes, Prabhu.
I asked this same question to Bhaktivedya Purna Maharaj. What if I just put loads of ghee on the fire? And he just said, oh, then you're a mudha. And he said, you're a fool. And then he quoted the 7th canto to that.
That is not the way of stopping it. That's not a recommended or bona fide way of stopping it. It could happen. 15th. Will you pour some water to stop the fire or will you pour ghee? Which is better? 15. Pumshalyapahartam chittam. Ghee is costly. Organic. What is that called? Protected cow ghee. What is that ghee? Okay, 15th. Pumshalyapahritam chittam konvanyomochitam prabhu atma rameshwaram rite bhagavantam adhokshajam. One pleasing slide came. After so many donkey slides and with mother. Yes, read the translation.
Who but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who lies beyond material perception and is the Lord of the self-satisfied sages, can possibly save my consciousness, which has been stolen by a prostitute?
Pumschalya apahritam chittam. My chitta is stolen away by Pumschali. Right? Kon vanyam mochitam prabhu. Who is there to protect me? Right? So, Atma Rama Ishwaram Rite Bhagavantam Adhokshajam. Apart from Bhagavantam Adhokshajam Krishna, who is Atma Rama, no one else can protect me from this pumschali apahritam chittam. So Supreme Lord Krishna is the only shelter. That is why, because Pururava came to this conclusion, we are reading his story. Otherwise, there are so many stories in this world who had this frustrated love as the prominent theme. We don't discuss about all of them. We discuss only about Pururava because 15th verse is there in this chapter. Right? So, what is that verse? Hasam hare ravanata akhila loka tivra shaka sokasru sagar visoshana matyudaram sammohanaya rajitam nijamayasya bhurumandalam munikrite makaradhvajasya. By focusing on the beautiful darshan of Krishna, his eyebrows, one will be protected from the arrows of Cupid. Right? These are the important verses that we need to meditate on to protect oneself from lust. Right? Next, 16th verse. Bhoditasyapi deva devyame suktavakyena durmateh manogato mahamoho napayatya jitatmanah kim etaya no prakritam rajvava sarpachetasah drashtuh swarupa vidusho yoham tad ajitendriyah. Now in 16th and 17th verses, Pururava says, I take responsibility. It is not her fault. I don't blame Urvasi for my condition. I blame myself. Read translations.
Because I allowed my intelligence to become dull and because I failed to conquer my senses, the great confusion in my mind did not go away. Even though Urvasi herself gave me wise counsel with well-spoken words. How can I blame her for my trouble when I myself am ignorant of my real spiritual nature? I did not control my senses and so I am like a person who mistakenly sees a harmless rope as a snake.
So here he is taking responsibility. For example, all the kings of Jarasandha, kings captured by Jarasandha when Krishna came, he said it's because of our mistake only. It is because of our pride we got this kind of treatment. We take responsibility. Ajamila said, I took that prostitute into my house and then chased away my, you know, chaste wife and my parents. So it's all my mistakes. Right? He also got this kind of realization. And all these people, they acknowledge Lord's mercy also. Because of Lord's mercy, I got this kind of detachment. Yesterday we were hearing about Avanti Brahman also. Right, they are coming to this kind of realization, that's why they are glorious. So Urvasi actually told the nature of a woman. In the 9th canto, those 3 verses come. So, like, nature of polluted woman. Right? That kind of woman. One more extreme case is to see every woman in this light. That is very horrible lesson, you know. That is not the right intended message from these episodes. Right? That's another extreme fanatic thing. So here Urvasi already explained about the nature of woman, but still I could not take that message because I was infatuated with lust. So he's taking that kind of responsibility now. I am considering rope to be a snake. I thought Urvasi is in the snake. Initially he said she cheated me like that. I thought she is not a snake. She is a rope only, right? So when that analogy is explained here. One who mistakenly thinks that the material illusory energy of the Lord exists for personal sense gratification will certainly bring down on his head an avalanche of material illusory fear and anxiety. For example, an object is there that is meant for service of Krishna. Right? If I think that this is meant for my sense gratification, I will be entangled by it. So that object is rope only. But I am thinking it becomes a snake to me only if I fear it. Getting right? In darkness, when somebody will see a rope and it will think that it is snake, then he will be fearful. Although it is a rope, he is thinking that it is snake. So although every object and every person in this material world is meant for sense gratification of Krishna, service of Krishna, our tendency to see them as object for my sense gratification will make them snake and will make us fearful eventually. That is the realization that he is arriving at. So Pururava himself was the offender for trying to exploit the external form of Purvasim. Next, 18th verse. Kvayam malimashah kayo daurgandhyad atmako suchihi kvagunah saumanasyadya yadhyaso vidhaya krita.
What is this polluted body anyway? So filthy and full of bad odors. I was attracted by the fragrance and beauty of woman's body. But what are those so-called attractive features? They are simply a false covering created by illusion.
So through proper deliberation, one should arrive at this detached state. One should give up one's attachment to material body and think about beauty of Krishna. So worldly beauty will agitate a person, but Krishna's beauty will pacify a person. The tendency to see beautiful objects is there in everybody's eye. Everybody wants to see some beautiful objects. But if he focuses his vision on these polluted objects, right, worldly objects, it will only agitate him. Oh, it's meant for my sense gratification. If you see the beautiful deity of Vrindavan Bihari, Krishna, then it pacifies, it cools down, it calms down. The tendency to see beautiful objects of the eyes is satisfied. At the same time, there is no more agitation. Right? So material beauty is limited and temporary. But Krishna's beauty is eternal and it is available for everyone. No one is deprived of seeing that beauty. Like that. Next. And once one sees that Krishna's beauty, it will pacify a person and it will induce more desires to see that beauty only. So Narada Muni got the vision of Krishna in the first chapter. After that, he was hankering to see that vision more and he was searching. Parikshit Maharaj saw Krishna in the womb. After coming out of the womb also, he was just searching. Who is that person who gave me darshan in the womb? Right? He was pulling everybody's dhoti and then seeing, he is not that person. He will go to the next person. He was searching. So that infatuation, right, captivating a person, that quality is there in Krishna's beauty. But if we don't utilize that captivating aspect of Krishna's beauty, we will be captivated by other beauties, worldly beauties, and get agitated. And attraction to worldly beauties only will end up in this kind of lamentation in future, which Aila is going through now. So now he is analyzing, what is this material body? It is just material beauty is an illusion, and this material body, whom does it belong to? Right? 19 and 20th verses, he says that. Pitro kim svam nu bharyaya swaminognehe swagridrayoh kimatmana kim suhrutam itiyo na avasishyate tasmin kalevare medhye tuchhanishte avishajyate अहो सुभद्रं सुनसं सुस्मितं च मुखं स्त्रियः.
One can never decide whose property the body actually is. Does it belong to one's parents who gave birth to it, to one's wife who gives it pleasure, or to one's employer who orders the body around? Is it the property of the funeral fire or of the dogs and jackals who may ultimately devour it? It is a property of the indwelling soul who partakes in its happiness and distress, or does the body belong to infinite intimate friends who encourage and help it? Although a man never definitely ascertains the proprietor of the body, he becomes most attached to it. The material body is a polluted material form heading toward a lowly destination. Yet when a man stares at the face of a woman, he thinks, what a good-looking lady, what a charming nose she got, and see her beautiful smile.
Yeah. So this body doesn't belong to any of these. Employer, parents, wife, jackals, fire, etc. Soul. No one can ascertain that this body is the property of this person or this element. No one can say that. So why unnecessarily getting attracted to the form of opposite sex and claiming that this body is meant for my enjoyment? So that's the realization he is getting. So a grave statement is given here. When somebody is attracted to the form which is manifested by Maya and trying to embrace that form of opposite sex, he is just holding two handfuls of stool, blood, urine, mucus, bile, skin, hairs, flesh, that's all he is holding. So ultimately the form of opposite sex is that only. Right? One unnecessarily need not be overwhelmed by the external beauty, which is that Prabhupada calls it as skin disease. Right? If this whatever 1 mm or whatever doctors can say, 0.5 mm thick layer of skin, when that is removed, everybody is just a lump of flesh. Right? Flesh, blood, urine, stool, mucus, bile, bones, nerves, right? Gases. This is what a body is. Just this skin, this one element, this one skin, one layer is just covering all of them, and it's because of this external show one gets attracted to it. Right? It's just that one peel. When the peel is taken out, it's flesh. Right? So one need not unnecessarily get attracted. A human being should be enlightened in Krishna consciousness and learn to serve the Supreme Lord without falsely trying to exploit his potencies. Falsely trying to attract his potencies. Basically, yesterday we have seen the creation chart. Right? We will see that again, once again. To make one small point, it just comes to my... So creation starts like this. Any body is just a combination of these. Right? Earth, water, fire, air, ether. Then it just manifested like this. Okay? And once this Mahavishnu exhales, all these manifestations are coming. Once he inhales, all this will wind up and go into him. Right? So these five elements... or maybe whatever, all these 23 elements, they mix together and manifest certain forms. The other image was there, where so many pots were there. What was that image? Okay. So now these pots are different, are of different shapes. So we, immediately, which pot is attracting your attention more? Which pot are you getting attracted to? This big one, this small one, this cute one, and this open big mouth, this small mouth. Right? This is plain, this has some design on it. Right? So, for example, you just get attracted to this pot. But this pot is nothing but the manifestation of this earth. One form of manifestation. Nothing beyond that. Right? So, similarly, whether the form of a... form of the opposite sex is beautiful or dark or light or thin or frail or stout or whatever, it's just a combination of these five elements. Right? If one is rooted in this understanding, then he cannot see them as meant to give me enjoyment. Right? It's ultimately this. And these are coming from Krishna only. Right, Krishna's material energy, his material nature, is just manifesting these elements, basic ingredients, which are just together, right, in certain form. Oh, but all are there in different proper proportions at proper places. That's why I'm just getting attracted to it. Right, for example, a sabji is there. You just put proper amount of sabji, proper amount of masala, proper amount of oil, proper amount of this. That becomes tasty. Similarly, when this earth, water, fire, and ether, when it is mix it together with proper proportions and manifests a beautiful form, I get attracted to it. Right? But ultimately it's coming from Krishna. One needs to understand that it is coming from Krishna. The actual beauty is there in Vishnu. Right? One should understand, one should, one woman was going like this, one proper disciple saw her. He was seeing like this. So Prabhupada noticed it. Then he just immediately understood that Prabhupada noticed it. And Prabhupada turned to him and said, "Beautiful, isn't it?" Then he was quite embarrassed to reply. Then he said, "If the creation is so beautiful, how beautiful the creator would be." Right? Focus on that. Right? So Sankhya people or Jnana people, what they understand is till this point, material nature, pradhan. They cannot see the personality behind. They will analyze the material elements so much, they will see, they will take into account all the material beauties around and say, it's all manifestation of illusion, it's all maya, okay, it's all prakriti, pradhan. They will think like that, and they will understand this maha pradhan or material nature as the root of all existence and be detached from it. Right, that is Sankhya philosophers. They who stop at Sankhya. Yesterday, as we said, identifying the root is Sankhya, watering the root is bhakti. So we go one step behind and see Mahavishnu and Krishna behind this whole cosmic manifestation and try to worship them and engage all the manifestations of this material nature, engage all the combinations of this material nature in Krishna's service. That's what we do. So if we analyze, everything is just a combination of earth, water, fire and ether. These 23 elements only. They are in different proportions, they are manifesting these objects. So a simple philosopher will just analyze it and then get detached. A bhakta will do this analysis and engage all of them in Krishna service, understanding that they are all energies of Krishna, meant to be servants of Krishna. Like that. So now here Pururava is coming to this understanding that this entire material body is just illusion, it's just a manifestation of material elements. So I am not the proprietor, no one can claim proprietorship. They are all manifestations of Krishna's material potency only. I should not unnecessarily get attracted to it. But I got attracted to it, I regret for it. Now I will take to devotional service. Like that. 21st translation, someone can read.
What difference is there between ordinary worms and persons who try to enjoy this material body composed of skin, flesh, blood, muscle, fat, marrow, bone, stool, urine and pus?
Okay. Tvan mamsa rudhira snayu medho majhasati samhato vin motra puye ramatam kriminam kiyad antaram. Kriminam kiyad antaram. What is the difference between your enjoyment of these material elements and a krimis, a worm's enjoyment of material elements? Worm also will enjoy sense gratification. Okay, it also looks for sense gratification from a combination of these elements. We are also looking for sense gratification from a combination of these elements. If our whole purpose or what is that, focus is on just identifying sense gratification, which even worms do, how is it different from how is a human being different from a worm? That is the question he is raising. Aharanidra bhaimaitanamja samanyameda pasubhinnaranam dharmo hitesha adhiko visheso dharmena hina pasubhi samanaha. What is that dharma? Savai pumsam parodharmo yato bhakti radhokshaje. If the parodharma, bhakti towards adhokshaje, is not performed by a human being, he is as good as a worm or an animal. Right? So he is coming to very deep realizations. 22. Athapino pasajeta strishu straineshu charthavit vishayendriya samyogan manakshubhyanti nanyatha.
Yet even one who theoretically understands the actual nature of the body should never associate with women or with men attached to women.
Mm.
After all, the contact of the senses with their objects inevitably agitates the mind.
This is the key line there. Two things this verse is mentioning. One is, don't associate with woman and womanizer. In fact, womanizer is more dangerous than woman. Someone who is attached to one woman, he is just absorbed in that one woman only. Someone who is attached to womanizer, who is attached to so many women, he is like more, you know, thrown into this deep dark well of sense gratification. Right? So he will get different flavors, right, from the through that one fellow. Right? Similarly, attachment to devotees is considered more greater than attachment to Krishna also. Right? So devotees describe Krishna in various ways, in various forms, in various qualities of Krishna, various names of Krishna. They are absorbed in glories of Krishna in variegated ways. So attachment to devotee will make us more Krishna conscious than attachment to Krishna. Similarly, attachment to womanizer will degrade us more than attachment to a woman. Right? So that is one point. Second, after all, the contact of senses with their objects inevitably agitates the mind. Contact with senses. Vishayendriya samyogan manah kshubyanti nanyatha. So mind will be agitated when senses contact sense objects. Why this agitation is there? Because I am seeing some object and passing a signal through my eyes to the mind. I am tasting some, you know, very sweet or spicy, whatever, some tasty object for the tongue, and mind is, that impression is stored by the mind. I am touching some very soft or, you know, delicate object, right? My touch of, you know, the sensation, the sense of touch will have some pleasure. It is recorded by the mind, right? And I eat something, see something, hear some music, some pop music or something, signal is stored in the mind. So mind has become storehouse of millions of such impressions. And all those impressions are because of sense perceptions. My senses are coming in contact with sense objects, and those impressions are getting stored in the mind. So what is the solution? Out of sight, out of mind. Control your senses, mind will automatically come under control. Right? If I don't see some sense objects, if I try to avoid those sense objects, then I am not increasing the impressions of my mind. Right? If I don't hear some nonsensical music, I am not creating any impression on the mind. Right? If I am not touching any very, you know, unnecessary objects, which unnecessarily agitate my sense of touch, so I am not storing more impressions on the mind. That's how mind, and simultaneously we also work on removing the impressions that mind has already accumulated. Don't accumulate more impressions and remove the impression that mind has already accumulated. So that's how mind will become free from crap, junk, kachra. When the mind is free from kachra, we can put Krishna consciousness there. If mind is overwhelmed with so many nonsensical impressions, there is no place for Krishna there. Right? That solution he gives here. In spite of having so much knowledge, one may, you know, read, you know, Sankhya, read, you know, teachings of Lord Kapila, Uddhava Gita and all that, and acquire so much knowledge. But still, if his senses are constantly in connection with sense objects, right, that knowledge cannot control the mind. On one side, knowledge is trying to control the mind, intelligence is trying to control the mind, and on another side, senses are pulling the mind. Right? In this struggle, often senses will win. So along with cultivating knowledge of what is good and what is bad, we should also avoid contact with sense objects. Then we will be able to protect the mind. Right? So along with taking proper medicines, we should also follow the diet, prescribed diet. Like that. On one side, there is a forest where you are trying to, you know, throw water and then put some water pumps and then trying to reduce it. And on top of it, some other fellow from the other side, he took a petrol tank and then throwing petrol on the fire. When will the fire come down? Along with watering, petroling is also happening. So one should stop that petrol pouring business and throw only water. Then forest fire will subside. Like that. So contact of senses with their objects inevitably agitates the mind. So what is the solution? Adrishtad asrutad bhavan nabhava upajayate asamprajunjata pranan samyatis stimiram mana stimitam mana.
Because the mind is not disturbed by that which is neither seen nor heard, the mind of a person who restricts the material senses will automatically be checked in its material activities and become pacified.
The mind is not disturbed by what is not seen and not heard. Somebody will, for example, now, in my childhood I never heard the name pizza. Right? After coming to, I think, B.Tech final year somewhere, then I heard there is something called pizza exists. What is that pizza? Then my friends took me to some restaurant and then whatever, that bread is there on top, they put some so many things. So this is called pizza. Okay. I didn't relish it so much, but my friends were relishing so much and I'm influenced to relish it so much. And somehow I just got the taste of it. Right? So till that time, even if somebody had said the name pizza, it would not agitate me, it would not do anything to me. Right? If you say some South Indian, you know, the chakra pongal, what is that, medu vada, all those are there. If somebody, I will develop it there immediately to eat them. Because I am used to that. So that which I have seen, that which I have heard, I will get attracted to it. Right? Similarly, the mind is not disturbed by that which is neither seen nor heard. So, if you don't want to agitate the mind, don't hear so much, don't see so much. Right? You can see Krishna's deity, you can hear Bhagavatam, but other things, okay, topics of material sense enjoyment, don't hear them so much. Okay, objects of material sense enjoyment, don't see so much. Then mind will not be agitated by them. Out of sight, out of mind. So this is the formula. Rishasringa. So as soon as opposite sex, a group came and then influenced him and then he got attracted. So till that time he was not attracted. Like that. Okay, to present a complete picture, it will take a lot of time, but whatever is there within these lines, I am elaborating and explaining. So it may be argued that even if while closing one's eyes, while dreaming, if I don't see, how can I make sure that I have not, I will control my mind? When I sleep, I get some dreams. In the dreams, I see so many sense objects, which I have not heard. If I have to contemplate on the sense objects, I always have the facility for it. Right? By not seeing, how will I control my mind? Someone may say like that. Mind will contemplate on those sense objects which you have already seen. Either in this lifetime or previous lifetime or somewhere, you came in contact, your senses came in contact with that sense objects, mind will store that impressions and in dreams or in your whatever thoughts, they will only come into picture. I can never think of, say some country, Africa or Malaysia or whatever, which I have never went there. Because I never went there. Now you say, Taj Mahal, Char Minar, whatever, some prominent objects of prominent places within India which I have seen once, then I say, I will have some connection. Okay, I will spare little of mental space to think about it. You say about some street in some corner of some country which I have never seen on the opposite side of the globe, it doesn't make any difference to me. Like that. So mind thinks or dreams of those objects which the senses have already perceived. If the senses have not perceived it, mind cannot think about it. So, don't bring senses in contact with sense objects so much till you are self-realized. If a self-realized person is there, whatever he sees, whatever he does, it doesn't make much difference on his mind. They are all elements of sadhana. When one restricts the senses from their objects, especially from intimate contact with the opposite sex, the mind's material propensity will slacken and like a fire without fuel eventually die. Don't feed the fire. Okay? Out of sight, out of mind. Restrict your senses means don't feed the fire. Fire is already there. You put so much oil. Then it will only become blazing. Now the last verse. Tasmat sango na kur kartavya. Strishu stai straineshu chendriyaihi विशुद्धं चाप्य विश्रद्ध षड्वर्गः किमु मादृशम्.
Therefore, one should never let his senses associate freely with women or with men attached to women. Even those who are highly learned cannot trust the six enemies of mind. What to speak then of foolish persons like me?
So even great learned person also are succumbed to the temptations of mind and sense objects. What about me? I'm a foolish fellow. You see, he thinks like that. Where else? 5. Vadanta Visham is one. Then another, that is also there. No, Rishabh Dev's first one. Mind verse, what is that? Nakuryat karhitit sakhyam manasihi avanavasthitaha. Next line is important. Nakuryat karhitit sakhyam manasihi anavasthitaha. 5.6.2. 3, if not 2. Anavasthitaha. Yad vishrambha chirachirnam chaskandha tapaishvaraha. Even people like Saubhari Muni or Shiva, who had that great wealth of austerity, they also get swayed away by this lust. Saubhari saw two fish and then he got attracted. Shiva saw Mohini Murti and he got attracted. So, tapasah, chaskanda tapa aishwaram. So, that ends the Aila Gita. You can give the mic to someone else. Or we'll take a break and continue. Short break. Rest of the chapter is most important. Right? Devotee Association, Krishna recommends. We'll try to cover a portion of the next chapter also today. Hare Krishna. Verse number 25. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Evam Pragayan Rupadeva Deva. Sa Urvasi Lokamatho Vihaya. Atmanamatvanyavagam Yamamvai. Uparamajnana Vidhuta Moha.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, having thus chanted this song, Maharaj Pururava, eminent among the demigods and human beings, gave up the position he had achieved in the planet of Urvashi. His illusion cleansed away by transcendental knowledge, he understood me to be the Supreme Soul within his heart and so at last achieved peace.
Mm. So Krishna is summarizing what happened to Pururava at the end. So finally he took my shelter. Then after completing his episode, 26th verse onwards, Krishna explains the importance of devotee association. So far he explained the effects of in unfavorable association. So far Pururava was under the association of Urvasi, right? He was absorbed in sense gratification. That kind of unfavorable association has to be avoided. Now he emphasizes on favorable association, devotee association. Tato adussanga mutsrujya satsu sajjeta buddhiman santa evasya chindanti manovyasanga muttibhi uktibhi.
An intelligent person should therefore reject all bad association and instead take up the association of saintly devotees whose words cut off the excessive attachment of one's mind.
Hmm. So reject bad association and take good association, saintly association. Because the saintly devotees' words will cut off the excessive attachment of mind. Just few verses back also we discussed this with the example of Prithu Maharaj's prayer. Right? Smritim punar vismritatvatvanam. And one more thing. Bhava pradam geharitim chinati. Tadasya kausharava sarmadatu hare katha meva katha sudharam. Another. Bhava pradam geharitim chinati. Where does it come? Third canto. I think fifth chapter only. The series of verses. Bhava pradam geharitim chinati. How does it begin? Kastrupniya tirthapado vidana chatre shiva suri bhiridyamanat yak karna nadim purushasayato bhava pradam geharatim chinati. Yeah. This is Vidura's verse to Maitreya. We keep forgetting.
To Uddhava. To Uddhava, and which is Shukdev Goswami is narrating.
Yes.
The other part of the Pururava story which was not spoken by Shukadeva Goswami, right?
No, that was spoken by Krishna only.
That was also spoken by Krishna.
And Krishna himself spoke about Pururava to Uddhava.
Yeah.
And he is giving his concluding remarks from 26 verse onwards.
No, I am talking about 9th canto, first part of Pururava story.
Correct. That was spoken by Shukadeva Goswami as a part of Moon Dynasty.
And where he left, he continued from like where Krishna spoke to Uddhava like that?
No, Sukadeva Goswami spoke that much and left. And Krishna spoke about what happened after that episode. No, Sukadeva Goswami is only speaking about Uddhava-Krishna conversation. Sukadeva Goswami is speaking everything. And Savanakrishi is speaking everything. Sukadeva Goswami started speaking from end of second canto only, beginning of first second canto only, until the middle of 12th canto. But Samanakaya Rishi, Suta Goswami is speaking from beginning to end. Yeah. Okay. Santo anapeksha machitta prashanta samadarshina nirmama nirahankara nirdvandva nishparigraha.
My devotees fix their minds on me and do not depend upon anything material. They are always peaceful, endowed with equal vision and free from possessiveness, false ego, duality and greed.
So he spoke about that Uddhava has to take association of devotees. And what is the quality of the devotee? What are the qualities of devotees? He says, nirmama, no proprietorship, no possessiveness. Nirahankara, no false ego. Nirdvandva, no duality, free from dualities. Nishparigraha, no greed. So these are the glorious qualities of devotees. They are prashanta, peaceful. Samadarshinaha, they have the equanimity. Manchitta, most important quality. Their minds are fixed on Krishna. Right? Anapeksha, not dependent on everything, anything material. So these are the seven qualities of devotees mentioned here. 28th verse. Teshu nityam mahabhaga. Mahabhageshu matkathaha. Sambhavantihi tanrinam. Jushatam prapnuyatyakam.
O greatly fortunate Uddhava, in the association of such saintly devotees, there is constant discussion of me. And those partaking in this chanting and hearing of my glories are certainly purified of all sins.
So why the association of that kind of saintly people is glorious? Because they constantly discuss Krishna Katha. Yavatte maya svishta bhramameha karmabhi tavat bhavat prasanganam sangasyano bhave bhave. Prachetas are praying for devotee association. We don't mind transmigrating from one body to another body, provided we get the association of devotees. Why? Because there is constant glorification of Krishna Katha. Bhaktim muhu pravahatam tvayime prasango. Bhuyad ananta mahatam amalasayanam yenanja solvanam arubhyasanam bhavadim. Neshe bhavad guna kathamrita panamattaha. Right? Bhavad guna katha. Krishna Katha will constantly happen in the association of devotees. That is the most worthy association that one can aspire for. 29th verse. Taye srinvanti gayanti. Yanumodanti chadritah. Matpara shraddhadhanascha. Bhaktim bindanti te mayi.
Whoever hears, chants and respectfully takes to heart these topics about me, becomes faithfully dedicated to me and thus achieves my devotional service.
Okay. So, by hearing and chanting in the association of devotees, one will be dedicated to Krishna, achieves Krishna's bhakti. So, bhaktim vindanti te mayi, he will achieve bhakti towards me. What else he wants? Okay, so one has to hear from a guru and follow the instructions of guru, then the polluted workings of the mind are checked and one sees things in a new spiritual light. When a devotee speaks and explains things, those impressions, right, those vibrations, sound vibrations coming from a devotee will stick to the mind, and when we go out and see things, those remembrances will make us see things in a proper perspective. Right, our worldview will change. Right, before attending prerana and after attending prerana, the attitude and the vision of a student will transform. Right, we have experienced that kind of change in our lives. Right, in our dress style, dressing style, hairstyle, and all that. Right, we have some experience so far. 30th, bhaktim labdhavada sadho. Kimanyad avasishyate mayananta gune brahmani anandanubhavatmani.
What more remains to be accomplished for the perfect devotee after achieving devotional service unto me? The Supreme Absolute Truth, whose qualities are innumerable and who am the embodiment of all ecstatic experience.
So 29th verse he said, you will achieve my devotional service. Bhaktim vindanti te mayi. And 30th verse he says, after you attain devotional service, what else you want? Right? Bhaktim labdhatava sadho kim anyad avasishyate. What else is remaining to achieve? Bhakti will give you everything. Right? So nothing awards as much happiness and knowledge as devotional service itself. Right? That's why Krishna is asking the gopis, Naparayeham, I cannot repay your debt. Be satisfied with your own bhakti. Right? Bhakti will give you everything. Even I cannot give what bhakti can give. Like that. Then, yathopashraya manasya bhagavantam vibhavasum sitam bhayam tamopyeti sadhun samsevatastatha. So, in the association of devotees, the primary benefit is to get bhakti for Krishna. And the secondary benefits are given in the 31st verse. Read.
Just as cold, fear and darkness are eradicated for one who has approached the sacrificial fire, so dullness, fear and ignorance are destroyed for one engaged in serving the devotees of the Lord.
Okay, dullness, fear, ignorance, they are all destroyed by devotee association or service. Nimajjan nimajyonmajyatam gore santo brahmavidas shanta sorry bhavabdhau paramayanam santo brahmavidas shanta naudrudhevapsumajyatam.
The devotees of the Lord, peacefully fixed in absolute knowledge, are the ultimate shelter for those who are repeatedly rising and falling within the fearful ocean of material life. Such devotees are just like a strong boat that comes to rescue persons who are at the point of drowning.
Here devotees are described to be ultimate shelter. Paramayanam. Paramayanam means ultimate shelter. Supreme shelter is devotees only. So they are like boats. In this material ocean, the living entity is drowning. Sometimes he is floating in the ocean. Sometimes he is at the bottom of the ocean. Yesterday we discussed, right? Sometimes upper planets, sometimes lower planets. But wherever he is within the material universe only. But devotee brings a boat. Devotee is like the boat. He picks up this person in the ocean and puts on the boat and take him to Krishna. Like that. They are like Nava. Now means boat. Devotee is like boat. He's the supreme shelter. And devotee is the supreme shelter at all stages of life. That is explained in 33rd verse. Annam hi praninam prana. Artanam sharanam tvaham. Dharmo vittam runam pretya. Santorvag vibhayor runam.
Just as the food is the life of all creatures, just as I am the ultimate shelter for the distressed, and just as religion is the wealth of those who are passing away from this world, so my devotees are the only refuge of persons fearful of falling into a miserable condition of life.
So, devotees only are the ultimate shelter for everyone at all stages. Only refuge of persons fearful of falling into miserable condition of life. Next, last verse, 34th verse. Santo dishanti chakshumsi bahir arkaha samuthita devata bandhava santaha santa atma hamevacha.
My devotees bestow divine eyes, whereas the sun allows only external sight, and that only when it is risen in the sky. My devotees are one's real worshipable deities and real family. They are one's own self, and ultimately they are non-different from me.
Okay. So, they bestow divine eyes, divine vision, to see Krishna and to see the things in this world in proper perspective. Okay. So, thus the saintly devotees are one's real friends and relatives. They are the proper recipients of service. So, someone who is bestowing these many benefits upon the soul, he should be the person who should receive service, right? We are meant to serve devotees. one should be the devotee of devotee, servants of devotee. So Krishna says, I'm more favorable to the devotees of my devotees than my own devotee. Like that. That story is there, right? Kanchipurna. Who is that pujari in Varadaraj? Kanchipurna only. So you are only serving me. You never served a devotee. Huh? Okay, last verse. Thus losing his desire to be on the same planet as Urvasi, Maharaj Pururava began to wander the earth, free of all material association and completely satisfied within the self. So that's how Krishna concluded this Pururava episode. We'll enter the third chapter also. Today's third chapter. We still have strength to continue. We'll not complete the chapter, at least. Huh? Complete. I don't have strength, even if you have. We'll go for maybe half an hour and do some prelude of deity worship. Right? Why suddenly deity worship is coming? So far Krishna is speaking about association of devotees. Suddenly he speaks about deity worship. So there is a transition. Transition is, Uddhava asks a question. Right? Bhakti without association of devotees is difficult for those whose minds are attached to family. So Uddhava is asking about such persons who follow deity worship mentioned in the scriptures, but they may not have association. So what to do? So how can the deity worshippers be delivered? So this deity worship is also called Kriya Yoga. So I want to know more about Kriya Yoga. So Uddhava is asking like this. First verse. Kriya Yogam Samachakshva Bhavad Aradhanam Prabho Yasmatvam Ye Yatharchanti Sattvataha Sattvatarshabha.
Sri Uddhava said, my dear Lord, O Master of the devotees, please explain to me the prescribed method of worshipping you in your deity form. What are the qualifications of those devotees who worship the deity? On what basis is such worship established? And what is the specific method of worship?
So he asked four questions. Process of deity worship, qualifications for deity worship, basis for deity worship, and method of deity worship. Okay. Yes, Prabhu, go ahead. He is also with you, no? Okay. So, deity worship is for Kanishtha Adhikaris. So, such worship also, worship acts powerfully to cleanse the heart of both the lust and one's lust to enjoy one's material body and the material family attachment. So, deity worship will reduce one's lust and family attachment. Right? So, although this deity worship is popularly known to be a method for Dwapar Yuga, why is it being recommended for Kali Yuga? Somebody may question like this. So, there are answers for it. So, here, okay, we will discuss them once Krishna starts speaking about deity worship. Now, we will complete Uddhava's inquiries. So Uddhava asked about this process of deity worship and qualifications, etc. And he is continuing the question till the fourth, fifth verse. Please read. He also speaks about parampara.
Second All verse. The great sages repeatedly declare that such worship brings the greatest benefit possible in human life.
Hmm.
This is the opinion of Narad Muni, the great Vyasdeva, and my own spiritual master, Brihaspati.
Hmm. Next.
O most magnanimous Lord, the instructions on this process of deity worship first emanated from your lotus mouth. Then they were spoken by the great Lord Brahma to his sons, headed by Bhrigu, and by Lord Shiva to his wife Parvati. This process is accepted by and appropriate for all the occupational and spiritual orders of society. Therefore, I consider worship of you in your deity form to be the most beneficial of all spiritual practices, even for women and Shudras.
Mm. Next.
Side 1. O Supreme Lord, of all lords of the universe, please explain to your devoted servant this means of liberation from the bondage of work.
Okay. So, Uddhava is asking about the qualifications for deity worship, the process of deity worship, etc. And he also says, that great sages like Narada Muni, Vyasadeva, Brahaspati, they also explained the benefits of deity worship. And you yourself spoke about this deity worship to Brahmaji and then Brahma's sons, then Shiva told to Parvati. So I understand that the deity worship, this method is a very popular method and it is relevant for all varnas and ashramas. So please explain to me in detail. That is the question. Now in the sixth verse, Krishna is responding. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Nahiyanto Ananta Parasya Karmakandasya Chodhava Sankshiptam Varna Yishyami Yathavad Anu Purvasha.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Uddhava, there is no end to the innumerable Vedic prescriptions for executing deity worship. So I shall explain this topic to you briefly, one step at a time."
So this process of deity worship is very elaborate. So Krishna wants to give a summary, brief summary, one chapter only in the entire Uddhava Gita. So I will complete in one chapter. He says, so since without appreciation of him, there is no definitive understanding of what is actually obligatory for a human being. So the various concepts of piety and methods amongst themselves without accepting the absolute truth ultimately cannot be reconciled amongst themselves. Right? So Krishna is reconciling the whole thing and then putting the summary of deity worship here. Otherwise, if you go to different Vedic literatures, there are different descriptions of deity worship. People may sometimes get confused. Oh, this is there or that is there, all that. So Krishna is giving a summary of the topic. Vaidikastantriko Mishra Itimetri Virdhomaka Trayanam Ipsite Naiva Vidhinamam Samacharet.
One should carefully worship me by selecting one of the three methods by which I receive sacrifice, Vedic, Tantric or mixed.
So three types of this deity worship, Vedic, Tantric and a combination of both, right? So Tantrika refers to such literatures as Pancharatra and Gautamiya. We do the combination actually. Mixed indicates utilization of both literatures. It should be remembered that so superficial imitation of elaborate Vedic sacrifices will not bring one the ultimate perfection of life. One must sacrifice according to the prescriptions given by the Lord. And what is recommended, most recommended for this is Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Not so much deity worship. Still we do deity worship. But what is the reason behind doing deity worship? There are two terminologies, archana and bhajana. Bhajana is the overall process of taking shelter of the Lord. Maam bhajanti, Krishna says like that. It's not just taking the Vaishnava song book and then singing Vaishnava song for 5 minutes. That is not bhajan. Bhajan is the entire process of taking shelter of Krishna. It's an all-encompassive thing. And archana means just the process of worshipping, doing some aarti, that is archana. Archana is not equal to bhajana. Archana is included in bhajana. Like that. But a conditioned soul has a natural tendency to respect the Lord, does not have the actual natural tendency to respect the Lord and other people. So he should formally worship the Lord. So four or five reasons are given why deity worship is also relevant in this age also, in our context of Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya also. Right? We say we are Mahaprabhu's followers, we should just chant the holy names. That is sufficient. One may say like that. But we also have deity worship and elaborate deity worship procedure, six aarthis, backups, we are all coordinating. Right? So there are reasons for it. So deity worship, one, it is introduced in Dwapar Yuga, but it's still recommended in Kali Yuga also, because a Kanishta Adhikari, a Kanishta Bhakta, needs a formal method for worshipping the Lord. It's not that he is conscious of the Lord and he can see Krishna everywhere, right? And he can see every object in connection with Krishna. That consciousness a Kanishta Adhikari cannot have. Right? When an advanced devotee, if he sees that plant, he can see that it is energy of Krishna. But unless there is a deity in the temple and one is engaged in deity worship, he cannot understand that this plant is meant for Krishna's pleasure. Unless he plucks the fruits and leaves and then makes bhoga plate and offer to the Lord, or then, you know, pick some, you know, twigs and other things and put it to use for dressing the deities. So he will not recognize that this is meant for the Lord. Now there, when there is deity worship, our thinking will go in terms of this is meant for Krishna service, this is meant for deity service. This cloth is meant to adorn Krishna. This food is meant to be eaten by Krishna first. This flower is meant to be offered to Krishna. Right? Even if we come up with some new object, we immediately go in front of the deities and offer it. Vidyapit laptops, books, all this we offer, projector. So it's meant for Krishna, meant for service of Krishna. That consciousness will become more prominent when there is a formal method of worshipping the Lord. Right? So there are different forms of the Lord. One is para. Para form is in the spiritual world, not very accessible. There is vyuha form. Vyuha is chaturvyuha. Vasudeva, Pradyumna, Sankarsana, Aniruddha. So that is also not accessible. Then there is vaibhava form. Vaibhava form is all leelavataras. Right? So leelavataras are accessible at specific timings. Right? In this material world also, one can see the leelavataras at specific times. If we happen to take birth around that time. Then antaryami form, super soul. It is always there, but we cannot completely access it. Right? We cannot completely perceive it. There is a fifth form called deity, archamurti, that is always accessible. Right? There are five things. So one is para, vyuha, antaryami, vaibhava. Para, vyuha, vaibhava, antaryami and archa. So these are compared with water bodies. Right? So spiritual world is like the water in the atmosphere. Right? We cannot access it, we cannot see it. But chaturvyuha is like water in the cloud. Unless the rain comes, we cannot access it. And leelavataras are like rainwater. Right? When the rain comes, we can access them. Antaryami is like groundwater. Right? Through the process of yoga, one can access it. But otherwise, they are always in ground. And deity form is like tap water. Yeah. As soon as you go to the temple, you can take darshan. As soon as you turn the tap, you can see. So, deity form is the most accessible form of Krishna. Although Krishna has unlimited forms. So, that's why we need a formal method. And there is another, a second reason. Kanishtadhikari has the tendency to quarrel with people. Right? So, the quarreling tendency can be minimized by purifying oneself by deity worship. So, in Dwapara Yuga, quarreling is more prominent. So neophyte means always fight. Right? That fight can be reduced when deities are in the center. So that's why at the end of Treta Yuga, deity worship is introduced to reduce the quarrel. Then third is, deity worship will help us change our vision. So this I briefly described. We see different objects. We think that they are meant for our enjoyment. But when there are deities in the center, we will see them as meant for the deities. Like that. Then deity worship also helps a person to decrease one's material contamination. Right? Because before worshipping the deities, there is some manas puja. Right? There is a remembrance that we are not these bodies, we are spirit souls, we are servants of Krishna. So there's a whole process before you enter to worship the deities. The materially agitated mind can be calmed down and be diverted towards worship of Krishna, and that happens through deity worship. And finally, deity worship protects us in next life also, if we fall down from one life, in this life. For example, Bharat Maharaj used to worship the deities, Indradyumna Maharaj used to worship the deities. They all Prithu Maharaj worshipped the deities, but he didn't have a next life. But Indradyumna Maharaj and Bharat Maharaj had next lives, so it was protecting them also. So that's why deity worship also becomes relevant for us. Then 7th verse is done, 8th verse. So now please listen faithfully as I explain exactly how a person who has achieved twice born status through the relevant Vedic prescription should worship me with devotion. Twice born status. Twice born is dvija status. He got Brahman initiation. So he will worship the deities. So with, before Brahman initiation, he will assist the worship. Right? Back up. assistant pujari. After Brahman initiation, one will directly do the puja. So that is dvijatvam. One will get initiation into Gayatri Mantra. Then there are two types of deities. 9th verse says that a twice born person should worship me, his worshipable Lord, without duplicity, offering appropriate paraphernalia in loving devotion to my deity form, or a form of me appearing upon the ground, in fire, in sun, in water, or within the worshipper's own heart. Right? There are 8 types of deities which are mentioned in Kapil Dev's teachings. One purport Prabhupada mentions. Which deity made of stone, then sand, gold, metal, wood, painting, mind, there is I think one more, crystal, something like that. So these are all different types of deities. One should first purify. Now from 10th verse onwards, Krishna is speaking about the purificatory process before starting the deity worship. So this is there in the Oriya notes. There is nothing more than that. So 10th verse. One should first purify his body by cleansing his teeth and bathing. Then one should perform a second cleansing by smearing the body with earth and chanting both Vedic and Tantric mantras. Right? Purification of the body through mantras. Anganyasa, Karanyasa also we discussed in Narayan Kavacha and other places. And little bit of deity worship comes in Pumsavana sacrifice. No, Payavrata. Payavrata, all that. So actually deity worship also improves our chanting and hearing. We constantly say worship Radha Krishna or Gaur Nithai. Someone will ask, whose deities are they? Okay, can you speak more about it? Then he would be inspired to take up some books and read more about those deities. So deity worship also will improve our hearing and chanting and reading of scriptures. That way also deity worship is quite beneficial. So it increases our interest to hear about the Lord. And deity worship also bestows the ability to control the mind. So far we have heard about controlling mind. So now keeping aside all our restlessness, we have to focus, say, for 20 minutes continuously on offering different paraphernalia to the Lord. Right? Focusing on dressing the Lord. Focusing on whatever, Abhishek of the Lord. So concentration, mind concentration. We can't be spaced out while being in Abhishek ceremony. Right? We have to be focused there. 3-4 hours is gone in concentrating on Krishna's worship. So, and deity worship is although recommended for Kanishtha Adhikaris, advanced devotees also can do it. They should not refrain from it. Like that. It's 11th verse. Fixing the mind on me, one should worship me by his various prescribed duties, such as chanting Gayatri Mantra at the 3 junctions of the day. Such performances are enjoined by the Vedas and purify the worshipper of reactions of fruitive activities. Right? The fruitive activities, the karma, will also be destroyed slowly by deity worship. The deity form of the Lord is said to appear in 8 varieties. Stone, wood, metal, earth, paint, sand, the mind and jewels. Yeah, this is what? Earth and sand. These two are... I was not remembering. Both are almost same. So there is a permanent form of the deity. For example, when you make a marble deity or gold deity or brass deity, the main deities are made with marble. Radha Vrindavan Bihari are marble deities. The Radha Ban Bihari, Utsav Murtis, they are metal deities, brass deities. So they are like permanent deities. So they are meant for continual worship. Right? And there are some temporary deity also that we will discuss in the next verses. 13th verse. The deity form of the Lord, who is the shelter of all living entities, can be established in two ways, temporarily or permanently. But a permanent deity, having been called, can never be sent away. So permanent deity is what is installed. We install with the Senadivas, the Netronmilan. You must have seen an Radha-Vrindavan installation. There is a long ritual. I think 5-6 important elements are there to install a deity. Installing a deity means you invite the Supreme Lord, a pure devotee would invite the Supreme Lord's presence, you please be here, we will worship you. And it's a permanent invitation. You will not send him away at any time. Like that. So that is a permanent deity. And the deity that is temporarily established can optionally be called forth and sent away. Right? But these two rituals should always be performed when the deity is traced upon the ground. Bathing should be done with water except if the deity is made of clay, paint or wood. In which cases, a thorough cleansing without water is enjoined. Right? So if the deity is say marble deity, we can do bathing. If it is a clay deity, we can't bathe, right? So if the deity is made of clay, mud, you cannot bathe it. It will melt. So that's why that is not recommended. And wooden also, which is, we cannot bathe, right? No? So wood also will absorb, there is expansion, contraction and all that, right? Painted it in a photo. What we have in the seven temples? Paint. Paint or print. In modern context, paint will become print. So some more details of temporary versus permanent deity worship is given in the purport of 13. You can see. So condition and procedures for temporary deity, they are given in 14th purport. The general principle is that pure devotee of the Lord understands his relationship with the deity to be eternal. Okay, from 15th onwards, the mood of deity worship and all this are described. We will see in the next class. We will end here today. Thank you all very much. Grantharashimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Tomorrow we will try to complete the next chapter also, deity worship and Jnana Yoga. Jnana Yoga is an elaborate chapter and more technical also. We'll see how it goes. But this week, we will complete the 11th canto. 12th canto will be completed at least 80%. If possible, we will complete completely. What are the dates? 20 is Nityananda Tridevashi, but how much time we have before that? I think we may not be able to complete by that time. Because after completing 12th canto also, we will have an overview session on 11th plus 12th cantos combined, a grand test on 11th and 12th cantos. 3 days will go there. 1 day for overview, 2 days for exam preparation and all. And 1 day, we will have a session on entire overview of full Bhagavatam. 10:30 to 4:30, we will go through all 12 cantos of Bhagavatam. It's an overview of overview. So every canto overview we will give in 3 hours, right? In 6 hours, we will give 12 cantos overview. With 10 subjects of Bhagavatam. Right? I didn't do this in the previous batches. Your batch is fortunate that we are doing. After that, we will start CC. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Yantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. Yeah,